waiting all week for this, and here it is. The Illegal Curve Radio Show starts now. Here comes 2 hours of hard-hitting hockey talk, and here's your host, Drew the Bear Mindell.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live tonight at www.ustream.tv, good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Radio Show. It's election day here in Winnipeg, and the one thing Winnipeggers have been able to agree upon unanimously is that this is the radio show you cannot miss each and every week, live on 92.9 Kick FM. We have a big announcement regarding the future of the Illegal Curve Radio Show coming up tonight at 7:30 p.m., joined in studio by my good friends Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberger. I added a different name to you.
You're hungry?
Ezra Ginsberg. I am hungry. And the operator of the R-Desk, Michael Remus. Gentlemen, good evening. Did you vote?
Drew, right off the bat, you need to chill out a little bit. I know you're pumped up. I know it's election day, and you are an honors political science graduate from the University of Manitoba and a former speechwriter in Ottawa, but
whoa.
You need to settle down. You're calling me Ginsberger. You're playing psychedelic Illegal Curve intros over here. But yes, it's great to be here, and I am looking forward to that announcement, and I'm sure we've already talked about this. I voted today. It's a big day. We might have a new mayor. We might have the same mayor. We might have a new school trustee in River Heights, but it's great to be here.
That's the race you're really keeping a close eye on, right, Ezzy?
Yeah, school trustees are important. I mean, they make the big decisions, whether or not they're going to allow junk food in the vending machines and such. So,
Richie, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Nice to be here, Drew. Excited about tonight. Excited about the big announcement about 28 minutes away.
28 minutes away to be exact. So tell all your friends to tune in to 92.9 Kick FM, the big announcement coming up at 7:30 tonight.
And Drew, we already announced that you're going to Costa Rica, so it's
can't be that
new. We already know that
it's
you're
something show related. That's not specifically show related.
Yeah.
And of course, if you're near your computer, log on ustream.tv/illegalcurve. Join in on the chat room. Say hi to Michael Remus, operator of the R Desk. We got lots going on. Before we get to the announcement tonight, let's go around the NHL. We've sort of got a wide open show tonight. We'll take calls if we're able to. I know they were having some phone troubles earlier here at Kick FM, so we'll try and do those. 780 Kick if you want to get in on the conversation. Send us a tweet at Illegal Curve on Twitter. Send us a Facebook message, illegalcurve.com on Facebook. And of course, you can send us an email, drew@illegalcurve.com. Let's go around the NHL. Let's talk and start with some teams that are really, you know, playing really good hockey in the last week. Some, you know, what I've called who's hot in the NHL. Let's start in Calgary. You know, it's amazing how a week can change things in
sure
the NHL. You know, last week everybody was wringing their hands. Are the Flames a disaster? You know, who's going to get fired first, Brent Sutter or Daryl Sutter? How are these moves, you know, these moves are blowing up on them. Really, it was an ugly scene in Calgary. Well, lo and behold, the Flames have rebounded from their slow start. They're now 5-3 on the season. Actually, 6-3 after last night's shootout victory over the Edmonton Oilers.
Exciting and game, Drew, by the way.
The Flames blew a 4-1 lead.
They did.
The Oilers came back to tie at 4-all, and then the Flames won it in the shootout 5-4. And the guy who was out with concussion problems, Rene Bourque, well, he's on fire. 6 points in his last two games. Richard, your thoughts on the Calgary Flames?
Well, that's a classic one. Basically, Drew, we talked about it 2 weeks ago. I think we said that, you know, on this show, Rene Bourque is the second best forward on the Calgary Flames and second to Jerome Iginla. And right now, he's the best forward on the Calgary Flames. So it's not as much of a stretch as some people may think. Now, obviously, he's healthy right now. Concussion issues are on the side for now, and obviously those are tapped to go away. But if he can, you know, keep his head clear, this guy, he has a great motor. He's really fast. He doesn't have the best hands, but the way he goes to the net, puts the puck on net, and has kind of a fearlessness, which kind of leads to the concussions, really helps him and endears him to Brent Sutter. Brent Sutter, before even last night's game, even like before the streak, really, a little bit at the beginning of it, before it, he was, you know, giving some serious praise to Rene Bourque. And I think that, guys, you know, obviously his game has improved game after game the past few. But I think, you know, Brent Sutter's comments, Ezzy, have to have helped his confidence.
Right, and I think that Brent Sutter at this point was actually, you know what, I was going to mention something too, you know, on the topic of Brent Sutter before I, you know, just chime in a little bit about Rene Bourque. Brent Sutter himself, I don't know if you guys have noticed too, Brent Sutter looks a lot more relaxed and calm this year. Last year was
Richard's nodding his head in agreement.
Absolutely.
There.
I mean, last year, you know, Drew, you mentioned that, you know, a lot of people were talking about, you know, the season already being a disaster, which is absolutely ridiculous and would only happen in Canada, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some cities, New Jersey, New York, there's a few, Philly, there's high expectations. Detroit. point. But in Canada, we would, we wouldn't be talking about this if it was any other place. But, Brent Sutter looks a lot more relaxed. I think he's learned a lot from last year. You know, there was a lot of controversy early on in the season. But, yeah, you're right. Rene Bourque has looked really good. And you can already tell who Brent Sutter goes to in clutch situations. And he was that guy last year. And even when he joined the Flames in the offseason 2 years ago, this is his third year. But, you know, Rene Bourque, I mean, they need him. Obviously, they don't need him scoring a hat trick every night.
Sure.
But, I mean, there's not a lot of scoring here. I mean, they're offensively challenged, and they have been since Camilleri left. But, Brent Sutter has already, gotten upset with Olli Jokinen, and he was benched already this year. Yeah. And, I mean, none of us were really expecting anything different, because Olli Jokinen's entire career has kind of been up and down, with the exception of a couple of really good years. But Brent Sutter is going to Rene Bourque, and Rene Bourque is he's a power forward. He's big, and he's still, kind of in the prime of his career. And
he is.
This is maybe his fifth year or something in the league, sixth year. But
to think about the fact that he was on the Chicago Blackhawks and they dealt him for a second round pick, imagine the amount of talent they had there in those first couple of years before they won the cup. And as he's right on, Brent Sutter has been more relaxed this year, in my opinion, as well. And you can see it. Remember last year, guys, when he got in that bickering match with Curtis Glencross on TV? Jermaine Franklin was there, and it was on TSN. They showed it, and he was obviously really hard on his team. And as he's absolutely right, he took a step back, I think. This day and age in the NHL, that act only lasts so long. And if it's your first year and you're going to get on players like that, what they're going to do is react like they did last year. He's taking a different approach. He's a very knowledgeable guy. He's getting hard on them when he has to be, but he's not hard on them all the time, and that's kind of a Sutter trait. So I think he's changed for the better, and he's a great hockey coach. And I think that the problem maybe for him down the road is that he gets tied to his brother Daryl. And the job that he's done as GM, which hasn't been particularly good. Because I think Brent Sutter can coach. He's coached at every level. Juniors, he coached the Devils, he's played, he's won Canada Cups, I believe he won a Memorial Cup with the Red Deer. The guy's a winner, and he's a really good coach. The problem is the roster. Now, what they've been doing lately is they've been, getting terrific goaltending from Mika Kiprusoff. And as much as you want to talk about Rene Bourque, without him, Kiprusoff in the back, backstopping that team right now, it could be a lot uglier.
Right, and I think, in Brent Sutter's case, it almost seems like, this was 10 years ago that he was the coach of the Devils, but
yeah,
his arrival in the NHL was so hyped up after those back-to-back gold medals in the World Junior Tournament, and I just think that he didn't get off to the right, start in New Jersey or Calgary, and now we're kind of starting to see the real Calgary team. Obviously, we're only 3 weeks in, but they really weren't as bad as they were last year when they what did they lose, 9 or 10 in a row, or they didn't win a game in 2 weeks. They're really not that bad.
The stats bear that out, Ezzy. I believe they scored more goals than they allowed, or they were close to it, and they were right close to the cusp. Like, they could have been a playoff team, not a good playoff team, but a playoff team. And so the ability for them to be a playoff team this year, I didn't pick them for the playoffs, but it wasn't out of the realm.
No.
And right now they're playing well. I mean, they're going to have trouble scoring all year. Just because they've scored a few goals lately, it doesn't mean they're not going to have trouble, but right now, they're moving in the right direction. If you can get some momentum and win some games, I mean, these wins count as they do later in the season.
If you, Calgary, good topic, but if you listen very quietly now, if you guys stay quiet for a second, they're not chanting Judy in the streets of Winnipeg. You can actually hear them from Montreal chanting Carey, and that's Carey Price. He is on fire, and it's amazing what's happened in 2.5 weeks. I mean, it wasn't that long ago when they were booing him off the ice in Montreal in the first exhibition game. Let's go through Carey Price's numbers on the year. 5 wins, 2 losses, 1 overtime loss in the season, 2.23 goals against, a .918 save percentage. In his last 2 games, he's 2-0-0, goals against average of under 1.99, and a save percentage of .958. Is this the Carey Price? Is he finally coming into his own? Is he the second coming in Montreal?
Of either, who's that, Andre Rasico or Rolly Melanson?
Your choice. He can be the second coming of whoever you want.
Well, I think this, what is certain is that he's playing very well right now, and his last 2 games really have been pretty ridiculous. I don't think any of us really at any point gave up on him. But the thing with Carey Price is last year he was in a really bad spot, and he ended up played less than he did in his rookie year. And this year they gave up on Yaroslav Halak. I mean, he, based on what he did, he almost should have been the other way around. But Carey Price is the number one goalie, and he's playing like it. And whether you want to say it's a second coming, I think he's just really confident right now, and the team is playing very well, and there's no reason to believe that he can't. He's not, any goalie is going to have bumps, but I mean, would anybody in this room be really surprised if Carey Price ended up with, you know, 30 to 35 wins and you know, five or six shutouts? I wouldn't be. I mean, you watch the guy play. He's fundamentally, he's very good.
Very sound. As you, I think, you know, Drew, I don't want to go to, you know, to the extent that, he is second coming. And he's, but, you know, it's been eight games, Drew. And us here in the studio, we've been fans of Carey Price since we got on the air. So we're not jumping on the bandwagon here. Carey Price is an immense talent. He has great form, as you just said. He's fundamentally sound. He's a big guy. He's athletic. He has everything you'd want in a netminder. You know, there's some mental hurdles you have to go through, but you have to remember he's young, guys. He's 22, 23. He's been in big games before at the World Junior level. I mean, the guy's a talented player. Finally, he's got an opportunity now to prove his worth, and with confidence comes a lot more things. And you know, they say 90% of the game is mental, 10% is physical. I wouldn't go that far. There's other factors, but the game's mental, especially when you play in a hotbed like Montreal. And Carey Price has all the talent to do so, and if he's allowed to do so, and the fans embrace him as opposed to, you know, booing him, I think that he has a great future. And it should be noted as well, though, that Yaroslav Halak has played lights out in St. Louis, too, so you really couldn't go wrong there.
This could very well be a trade that has benefited both teams.
Well, we'll see. Lars Eller needs to turn into a pretty good player for the justify that deal at the time they made it.
Well, let me stay on that topic for a second.
Halak could be St. Louis's goalie for 10 years, Drew.
I mean, think
he's not exactly a veteran of this league at this point.
You know, I just think Montreal had no other option in a salary cap era rather than to trade Price when they to trade Halak when they did.
But yeah. the trade wasn't an issue for me, and I thought they got back. You know, there's a little more upside for St. Louis, a little more downside for St. Louis. There were some rumblings, like Pierre Maguire said to TSN, that if they had waited a little bit longer to shop them, they might have got more, but. I'm happy with them.
But you saw the free agent market for goalies this offseason. There
the
was nothing.
The truth is, they sold high, and that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, Carey Price and Yaroslav Halak, I think, are very close in talent, and you sold high. Because if you sold, I mean, granted, Price is very well liked around the NHL by scouts and GMs alike, but you're selling high, and that's good business.
And, Richie, I think you're right. And I think regardless of Lars Eller, I think, is only 21 years old. I think regardless of what happens with Lars Eller, I think this trade is always going to be based on, throughout their careers, how Price does versus how Halak does.
Exactly, I agree.
And right now, they're both doing well. But, I mean, it'll be the type of argument that you'll have kind of on a season-to-season basis. I mean, Tuukka Rask, Justin Poggi, the Toronto, it's infamous that they traded away Rask for Raycroft, and then they chose Justin Poggi, who right now is in the AHL. So that's 3 years ago. 3 years from now will probably be a better time to judge who won that trade. But
good point.
Yeah. Moving to Ezzy's Eastern Conference Stanley Cup or Eastern Conference champion Stanley Cup representative, the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Well, good.
5 wins, 2 losses, 1 overtime loss on the season so far through 8 games. Steven Stamkos leaving the NHL. He's got 5 points in his last 2 games. 8 games played, 8 goals, 7 assists, 15 points on the season. Yeah. Could he be the best player in the NHL right now?
He could, but I'm going to let Ezzy talk here because Ezzy, if I recall, a few weeks ago predicted Steven Stamkos to win his Art Ross Trophy.
No, I didn't predict.
No, that was you. Yeah.
And we weren't sure.
Credit to Remus, because we weren't sure.
I don't think over the course of the season he'll be able to get enough assists. I think he's top 5 player in the league. I don't think he'll be able to get enough assists, but right now he has.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. For him, he's not going to – well, I mean, right now it looks like he could score as many goals as Ovechkin, but, I mean, the assists are probably what will hold him down. Stamkos has been terrific, and, you know, I mean – yeah, sure, you can make an argument that he's the best player in the world, but I mean when you factor in a bunch of other things, I mean it would be tough to argue against Sidney Crosby.
I agree.
And the thing with Steven Stamkos is he's in a great position now. Tampa Bay has a lot of good forwards, and there's obviously a bunch of us on the show weren't really too much in favor of the Kubina. There's a couple of defensemen there that would leave a little bit to be desired in the Eastern Conference, but if you look at like the way Stamkos is doing, I mean he's the best scorer in the league, and
yep,
Stamkos right now looks like a player who, I mean, just like Crosby or Ovechkin or Malkin, at 20 years old, maybe he's a few months away from 21, the way he's playing, it looks like he's got the scoring touch. A lot of people have been comparing his one-timer to Brett Hull.
Well, it's funny you say that because I'm going to lead in here, and Drew's going to tell me doing my plug. But anyways,
you're going to talk about your book
in
again.
In the hockey perspectives book, excuse me, over the summer, I was actually with Ezzy when I was writing this, and I wrote in the book that Stamkos reminds me a lot of Brett Hull, but a faster skater.
Where's the book available at?
And you can get on Amazon.
Okay. Amazon. Hey, hold on. What about a plug for all of us at Illegal Curve here? the two guys that we interviewed in that exhibition game are 1-2 in the NHL in scoring, Steven Stamkos and Patrick Sharp.
There you go.
So, we know how to pick the interviews.
Pretty good.
No. But,
those are the only guys who didn't run away screaming from Ezra, so, you know, we got that going for us.
Hey, I was, Scotty Bowman and Stan Bowman were right there, but I couldn't interview them. They had to catch a flight, but, I mean, the talent on the Lightning is just sick, and, you know, it's going to be very difficult for Stamkos to not reach those numbers. I mean, he's got 15 points already. The guy's flying around.
Such a good shot.
Wow. He's got a terrific shot, and I mean it's going to be hard for the Lightning not to make the playoffs, because this year it's all coming together. Stevie Y gave them those extra guys, a guy like Sean Bergenheim, you know, I mean
Dominic Moore,
Moore, guys that you know have a lot of talent but weren't working out on the Islanders for Bergenheim, and then Moore on Toronto and New York. So
and the truth is, Ezzie is they're in a weak division. And Guy Boucher, we haven't spoken about yet, but he's a bit of a revolutionary coach. He's employing what's called a 1-3-1 system. And quickly explain it to our listeners. What a 1-3-1 system is you have one guy in on the not an aggressive forecheck. It's when you're not forecheck and the other team is coming back down your end. They play a 1-3-1, which is one forward and deep angling guys. And then they have three guys basically across the ice. So it's hard to get across. And then one guy is a safety behind. Behind that, it's a different system, something that you really haven't seen before, and it's quite revolutionary, and I like to see how it works. He's also very aggressive in the offensive zone, and his defensive zone has a lot of moving around. His defensive coverages that he implements have a lot of people running around, but, you know, collapsing kind of towards the net. Guy Boucher is a coach who's, not exactly, one of those retreads, quote-unquote, and I don't say that offensively, but he's creative, and I think Stevie Yzerman has hit jackpot with him.
And Richie, we were talking about this on the weekend. Sean Gordon of the Globe and Mail wrote an article about Guy Boucher, and along with kind of his tactical strategies, he's a type of guy who's bringing that, you mentioned, kind of a fresh approach. He's another guy who's trying to get the most out of individual players and kind of bringing a sports psychology approach. And we were talking about that in that article, and it was pretty neat to see, because Guy Boucher, you know, a lot of times a rookie head coach, you don't know a lot about him. We know about Scott Arneil because he coached the Moose, but Guy Boucher has brought a totally different approach than Rick Tocchet. Rick Tocchet's an old school hockey player, you know, dump the puck in, your scores get the goals, your tough guys bang and crash, and, you know, right now, I mean, with the exception of maybe Nashville, Tampa Bay looks like, you know, the most improved team.
I would say that they are the most improved team.
Based on their off-season acquisitions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Last player who's really impressing so far early this year, Tim Thomas, he of the Boston Bruins. He was the number one goalie going into last season. He lost the job to the aforementioned Tuukka Rask. His number is 4 games played so far this year, 3 goals against. Goals against average of .75 and a .978 save percentage. Has he regained that number one job?
I think it's too early, Drew. He's played 4 games, so it's not going to jump to conclusions. He's got talent. Last year was a down year. Goalies fluctuate a lot. That's what we have said on this show before. They fluctuate a lot. Tuukka Rask was great last year. He's a very good goaltender. Tim Thomas is a very good goaltender. And let's not forget, guys, that you're playing in a Boston system, a Claude Julien system. Preaches defense, preaches blocking shots, preaches collapsing
from the
net.
But look at Tuukka Rask's numbers. They're awful.
It's a couple games. How many games?
I know it's only a couple games, but I'm saying.
Come back to me at the end of the season. Let's see what their numbers are.
Okay. So
I think that's obviously, this is obviously a question for Claude Julien, but I think, and you know, I'm not speaking for Richie here, but I think this year, I think we will probably just see Rask playing less games. Based on last year, you know, it looked like Rask was going to get 60 games. He might only get 40 games this year.
Sure.
They might split it 50-50.
You're paying Thomas, you might as well.
You're paying him a lot of money.
Well, you're paying him a lot of money, and the other half of that would be, you know, you're paying him a lot of money, you play him, play as well, trade him.
And Drew, the one thing, I know you're high on the Bruins this year, and I am too. I think when it comes to playoff time, then you have to pick a number one goalie.
That's right.
You don't ever have two starters in the playoffs.
Well, the Jets tried to do that and didn't work. But it never hurts having a solid backup in that. I mean, otherwise you end up with Michael Layton as your starting goalie in the playoffs.
Flyers did that last year.
Hey, he did fine. Layton did fine.
But Boucher was much better. You know,
I know.
It can happen, but I agree with you. I agree with you, Ezzie. You need to pick a goalie at playoff time.
Okay. Why don't we leave it there, and when we will take our first commercial break, we're going to talk about some injuries in the NHL. And coming up at 7:30, of course, our big announcement. The future of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to 92.9 KICK FM. It's time black. It's 7:22, we're back on the Illegal Curve radio show. Coming up at 7:30 tonight, the big announcement about the future of the Illegal Curve hockey show.
There's two announcements happening in the city tonight.
There's a couple of big announcements. The mayoral announcement and that announcement. But ours obviously overshadows the mayoral announcement.
Vote Remus.
No comparison. I voted Remus. I write in ballot for Remus, in fact. Anyways, injuries around the NHL. They've played a big topic really in the last couple days and even today. Just started late last night.
How's Bryce Salvador doing, Drew?
I don't know. But late last night, warming up for the game against the Vancouver Canucks, Craig Anderson of the Avalanche went off with a knee injury. He's out indefinitely. Reports have him that he'll be able to avoid surgery, but he's out for a long period of time. How big of an injury is this to the Avalanche?
Huge. I mean, you can't understate how important Craig Anderson is to that team. Peter Budaj actually put up pretty reasonable numbers last year, if I recall correctly, but Craig Anderson has since signing from Florida on a two-year deal, by the way, a pending UFA, and a guy who, if not re-signed fairly soon, could command big money. Big goaltender. You know, just plays his angles well, plays big, and his goaltending is extremely important to that team. Now, I don't know if it's as important as it was last year. Last year he was tremendous, but I think their team has developed. You know, they had young players last year, still have young players this year, but the young players with a year under their belt here, a couple years under their belt. So guys have progressed a little bit more there, and, you know, he's being counted on, again, to be very good, but maybe not as heroic as he was last year. But the injury is very significant, Drew, and night in, night out, if you have to count on Peter Budaj, which clearly they didn't think they could when they signed Anderson, then you're going to be revert back to that for a period of time, and can he hold the fort until he comes back? That's the question.
We don't know how serious this injury is at this point,
I'm not sure.
But, I mean, obviously, at this time of year, you don't want to see something significant because he obviously is you know, playing 5 out of 6 games or whatever
that's
you
right.
want to say. So, you know, not good timing, but I'm pretty confident Peter Budaj knows the system, and he's been there for a while now. You know, I wouldn't be as worried. I'll tell you this much, going back to our conversation before, I'd be a little bit worried if Alex Auld has to go in.
They haven't played a game yet, have they? Or one?
He's only played one, but one. Alex Auld, even though I've always been a big fan, is dating back to you know, the junior days.
Not so much for me.
But he's struggled, and on a team like Colorado, you know, you've got Adam Foote, Scott Hahn, and, you know, John Michael Lyles. You're not exactly talking about, you know, crappy defensemen here. So I think, and Peter Budaj, once again, is familiar with the team. So they're not going to be as hurt as bad, but this obviously isn't good news.
No. And this is, you know, in a division that they play in, guys, they don't play in that tough a division in terms of scoring. So obviously teams like Calgary, who's hard-pressed to score sometimes, Minnesota's not the most offensively dynamic team, and neither is Edmonton. That helps them. I haven't looked at their schedule for the next little while. I mean, they're going to probably face those teams. But last night, for example, the highest scoring team in that division, Vancouver, potted 4 goals on Budaj. So we'll see.
You know, moving to St. Louis, a guy not a lot of guys probably know about him. Not a lot of fans know how important he is. Blues defenseman Roman Pollock is out indefinitely following wrist surgery to repair a severed tendon.
Yeah.
Talk about Roman Pollock and what he means
for
to the
fans.
Blues.
That's not an obvious relative of Richie. Yeah, Richie's or mine. We've been hearing more about Roman Pollock a lot, and you know. With the defensive talent on the Blues, obviously show it's a testament to how good he is. But
you look at that Blues roster, Ezzy, and you have Eric Johnson, who's a big guy, moved the puck, he's learning his way defensively, and you have Eric Brewer, who's a pretty solid skater, not great offensively. Carlo Kaliakova, who's a puck mover, and you're looking at the back end, and Roman Pollock.
Kaliakova's impressed me a lot.
He has too. Me too.
You know, he kind of fell off the radar a little bit. Sorry to interrupt.
That's
you,
right.
But
I agree.
I was watching the Blues. You know, the game that I picked last week when we were picking games against the Blackhawks.
I saw the first match of those two teams, and he
was Kaliakova. Yeah. He's throwing his body around, and he looks like
good skater.
He's finally found a good fit because Kaliakova. Remember, back in the days of Toronto, I mean, that he was like that. He was the latter day.
I agree, as and I
Luke
think
Shen.
and Roman Pollock, what he adds to that team, guys, is he adds a stay at home presence. He's a big guy. He's thick. He can move the puck adequately. He is he's physical and he blocks some shots. He's hard to move. He's a stay at home big stay at home defenseman on a team with a fair amount of offensively talented players. He's certainly complements the other talents on the team, and they're going to lose him. He's a right defenseman. He's a right-handed shooter. He's going to be it's a fairly big loss there for St. Louis. And again, because they're not in a big market and because their team is still not there yet, but they're moving forward, he doesn't get a lot of attention. But he played in the Olympics last year. You know, this guy's talented.
Moving on to Washington, well, rather Hershey in this case. It's a very scary situation involving Michael Nylander. He's no longer in the NHL, but that's really mainly a salary cap issue than anything else.
It is.
Playing for the Hershey Bears, he was hit from behind, fractured 2 neck vertebrae. There was a serious fear that his career was going to be finished. I'm not sure that it's not going to be, but he's managed to. He's under surgery. He's done for the year, that's for sure. you know, as a guy playing in the AHL, and then, I mean, you see it with Sheldon Surre also playing in the AHL for salary cap reasons, who just broke his hand. Yeah. You know, these guys have to be thinking, you know, what did I do to deserve this?
Well, who do you want me to start off with?
Doesn't matter. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to go off on Surre because I have a Surre issue. I think you're watching TV last night and you're looking at the interviews and they're talking to Steve Tambellini about his fight and, you know, how injured he is and if she should be fighting. And Steve didn't come out and obviously there's a serious issue there between the two of them because he didn't come out and say he shouldn't fight. He basically said he can, but he wasn't overly friendly about it. The fact is, guys, if you're going to throw Sheldon Surre into the minors all year because you don't like the contract that you signed
him to fight.
Don't complain when he starts playing hard, when he plays a regular game, when he wants to get back to the NHL. Don't complain about that. And they weren't complaining, but they weren't exactly, praising. You don't have to praise him, but you can't throw a guy into the minors, expect him to play his game, and then get mad at him when he fights. You signed him. He used to fight when you signed him. You gave him the big money. Don't hold it against him. I have an issue with that.
And, Richie, there's a couple things here, too. Sheldon Surre, first of all, has fought his entire career.
Yeah.
He's a big guy. This isn't something new for him.
Good leader.
And he's not happy that he's in the AHL.
Yeah, I wouldn't be either.
And, of course, these injuries, I mean, it's unfortunate. Nylander, he was expecting to be in the NHL, so was Surre. I mean, he obviously hit from behind. That is unfortunate, and that's unlucky. As far as Surre goes, that's part of the game. If you're going to fight, and you break your hand. Apparently, he's going to be out for a few weeks. But when I first saw that, I was thinking, I wasn't surprised that he was fighting. But you got to think like there's someone else on this team that could have been out there scrapping. The AHL is a unfortunately or fortunately the way you look at it. A league where there is more of the
That's
rough
right.
stuff
Physical.
On a regular basis. So,
I just think these guys. It's a very troubling one.
Give him a break.
Okay, fair enough. Final one on the injury front before we get to the big announcement. Colby Armstrong out 4 to 6 weeks. Somehow he popped a tendon in his hand.
I saw the play. I mean, he's speaking of Colby Armstrong and the skills. He's a third line. Winger, he's got not bad hands for a third liner. He can hit.
I've always liked Colby Armstrong.
He can play in situations that you want him to because he's versatile. Pretty good shot actually on him. He's very physical. Sometimes goes over the edge. Yeah, he'll be a loss to the Leafs on that third line wing spot. Will it make or break the team's season? No, but I mean they could use him. It's nothing crazy. He'll be back in about a month.
You know, for a Leafs team that's very short, that's very thin in depth.
Good point. That's a good point, Drew. I mean
especially because they. I mean, granted, it's early in the season, but they've exceeded expectations through 8 games so far. Like
yeah,
nobody's
coming back to earth now. But yeah,
so they can't afford to take any. They can't afford to have any injuries. They don't have enough offense as is.
I think that's a fair point.
Yeah. So they take any injuries, and it really affects them. Just after 7:30.
Oh, you ready?
Ready for the big announcement?
I think I'm ready, but I'll leave it to you, Drew.
There you go. Got the background
Turn
music.
Turn it up a little bit.
Turn it up, yeah. Come
well,
on.
Well, I got to be able to talk over it.
It's party.
Celebrate.
Can you hear me? Okay, good. Anyways, those of us at the Illegal Curve Radio Show, which is soon to be rebranded as the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, are pleased to announce that beginning Saturday, November 6th, 2010, from 10 a.m. till 12 noon, and each and every Saturday, we are making the transition to Sports Radio 1290 on the AM dial here in Winnipeg. You know, we're thrilled about this new opportunity to join the exciting new venture occurring at Sports Radio 1290. We owe an extreme debt of gratitude to all of you involved that have been with us on Kick FM over the past 18 months, especially to the Kick FM management and those involved in the Kick FM studio and station who've really nurtured three young men who didn't have much radio experience coming 20 months ago. It doesn't seem like that long ago.
Four young men.
You see, I can't see Remus because he's behind the glass there. But four young men. It doesn't seem that long ago we were doing podcasts in the basement here at Kick FM, and to think that 20 months after that we're going to be joining Sports Radio 1290 is a real thrill for us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's in a very exciting time, Drew. Obviously, we're all excited in this room, and you don't know where to start. You just said that we owe a debt of gratitude to a number of people, and Rick Baverstock, the station manager, first and foremost, for giving us the opportunity, and Ezzy for inquiring, and him for giving us the opportunity. I mean, we don't get anywhere without that opportunity. And then people along the way, people who have opted our show, volunteered to opt our show, obviously.
Volunteered their time, absolutely.
Denise, first and foremost there, and many others who did. Kirsten did a lot of time here. Adam Toy, when he was here. Here you go, David Turnbull. A lot of people have done that. And obviously, another thanks to Marty Gold from the Great Canadian Talk Show on the station from 4 to 5:30 every day. Having you on every Wednesday, and if you weren't able to, then me on every Wednesday to preview the show, to talk hockey, to give the show a little bit of publicity. I mean, there's so many people to thank, Ezzy.
Right, and you know, and just so everyone knows, we will be on the air. I mean, Drew's going to cover this too, but we will be on the air next week. Will be our last show, so we are going to do an even more complete list, if I'm not correct, where we're going to thank
a lot of people. Next week will be certainly a it'll be a formal congratulations to everybody.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I mean, it is super exciting. I mean, you know, we wanted to be on the station, and obviously, sports radio has been on air for about a month now, and we're getting really pumped up, and you know. We were very thankful for, and we've had some great shows. Thanks for looping that, Drew.
No problem.
I like
and,
that.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting, and we're looking forward to next week. We're going to obviously have a lot planned for next week. We might even bring a schmootort in studio here, or some type of other cake. But yeah, it's awesome. And
yeah, we can use a cake next time.
Remus, do you have a couple words?
Yeah, you know, I'm really excited for next week. This is obviously big news for Little Kirby. You know, we started the website, you know, a bit over 3 years ago, and I never really thought that it would come to this. And I'm looking forward to next week. Expect a super long goodbye rapid fire, which may or may not feature Time of Your Life.
Ah, you have to.
You have to do it. You can't have a retrospective without Time of Your Life. I think it's actually a new rule.
You can't.
Yeah. So, anyways, we're thrilled about this opportunity, and you know, it's the show's not going to change, which is really one thing we're very excited about. You know, the same format, more or less, will be coming over there to Sports Radio 1290.
I think the only thing that's probably going to change is Drew's been, you know, hanging out with Jay from Curve and Ace Burpee from Raw 103.
My ego's going to get bigger. That's the only problem.
Drew's now becoming part of the canon of sports radio personalities, local personalities. So aside from that, me and Richard will probably be still at his house watching hockey, eating nachos. But we might lose Drew.
I'll be out with the beautiful people. But you know, the format, the show will stay the same. You know, the same quality interviews that you've come to expect, and the quality hockey analysis that you've come to expect here on the Illegal Curve Radio Show will be coming over there to Sports Radio 1290. We're already working on lining up a fabulous kickoff show for Saturday, November the 6th.
We should note that next week on our last show on Kick, we're going to have Craig Custance of the Sporting News, who, if you recall, if you've been listening all during this whole time, Craig Custance was the second guest on the Illegal Curve Radio Show when we got on there.
That's right.
He was on the show that Patrick Sharp was on, right?
That's correct.
So some very good symmetry there to you know, start it off and then wind it up with the same sort of way. But you know, come join us. You know, Sports Radio 1290 every Saturday morning. And we thought that, you know, the Saturday morning time slot is just something terrific. We thought it was, you know, when you're Saturday morning, at least when you're a parent or whatever, you're driving your kids to and from hockey. You got your radio on. Saturday is hockey day in this country.
That's right.
Every, you know, you wake up Saturday, you might not know what you're doing Saturday night, but you know that you can get together with your boys and have a few beers and kick back and watch Hockey Night in Canada.
Drew, are we going to play this song the entire show? No, just
this entire segment. But I'm looping it, like you said.
Yeah, you got to loop it.
Yeah. But, you know, so you start your day off 10 a.m., turn on the 1290 on the AM dial here in Winnipeg, and, of course, sportsradio1290.com for all those who are listening online tonight. You know, you'll be able to find us there, and, you know, you get in the mood for hockey talk is what you do, and you know it's going to be as interactive as this show is, and we're just really excited about the opportunity to reach a bigger audience here in Winnipeg. A little tinge of sadness behind it,
sure.
A little tinge of sadness over the good times we've had here at Kick FM, but you know. Yeah.
Drew,
an exciting opportunity as well.
I might start showing up here Wednesday nights without everybody just because it's so used to in the routine.
That's right. I know.
Wednesday routine.
Can we still go for nachos after the show?
Yeah,
after
sure.
On Wednesday nights?
Sure.
That's what I'm going to, you know.
You know, Drew, speaking of sadness, I'm pretty sure Allie Kay is crying in the chat room right now.
She's just going to have to wake up a little bit earlier. I know
that's
in
right.
Phoenix, you know, she's out in Phoenix, and I think
it's 8 o'clock in Arizona.
Is it 8 or is it 9? Don't they do something
maybe
funny
nine.
With daylight savings time?
1 hour, whatever.
She
mountain time.
Okay, well, whatever it is, she'll just have to wake up a little bit earlier. That's all, and you know, or you can find it. You know, we'll try. We're going to do our best to endeavor the show to be on iTunes like it currently is. So if you happen to miss a show,
and there is live streaming on the station already, so
that's right. So you just, you know, it's an easy transition. We just wanted to give you the heads up, and we're going to drill it into your head over the next 2 weeks or so. But I mean, Saturday, November 6th, 10 a.m. here in Winnipeg, Sports Radio 1290. That's the station. SportsRadio1290.com is the website. You'll be able to find us. And then you'll be able to celebrate with us.
You know, I meant to say, like, in all honesty, it's just a great opportunity. It's cool. It's, you know, we're excited, and we hope you follow us along. The thing is, we have to thank them, and we're going to thank them next week.
More formally, absolutely.
More formally, but right now, guys, I mean, in this room and in the other room, Drew, through the glass there, the people we have to thank most are the fans.
Absolutely.
I mean, people who download our show off Kick FM website, who download it on iTunes, who watch it on Ustream every week, who email us and message us, and who read the website when it was around. I mean, the people who listen in their car, nobody talks about, you know, we don't get anywhere without people actually tuning in and hopefully enjoying what we produce, and that's first and foremost. The fans get the number one thank you.
And I also want to throw a thank you out to Dave Shore. Hopefully he's listening right now. I'll thank him again next week. But Dave Shore is responsible for helping me change my voice. A lot of people don't know this that are listening out there, but I actually have a really high-pitched female voice. And thanks to Dave Shore, he helped me. He got me to smoke and start drinking coffee and start you know, changing a couple of things in my diet. And because of him, I have this voice that I currently have now. And I mean, it's only for the radio. When we're off air, I still sound like a prepubescent girl.
But. And if your diet changed, I wonder what it was like before.
well, some things are best left unsaid. How about that? Anyways, to wrap it, to finalize it, Saturday, November 6th, 10 a.m., Sports Radio 1290 here in Winnipeg on the AM dial, sportsradio1290.com on your computer. Stream it live, tune us in, call in. We're excited about the opportunity. And next week, our final show here on Kick FM, it'll be a two-hour, it'll be a retrospective as well as all your latest hockey news. Let's go to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be talking, we're going to be doing the Who's Not portion of the Who's Hot and Who's Not segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 Kick FM. Cheap, 7:41 in the evening. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Radio Show. I am Drew Mandel, joined by Richard Pollock, the original thriller himself, Ezra Ginsberg, and Michael Remus, the operator of the R-Desk. And in case you are just tuning us and missed the big announcement, Saturday, November 6th, 10 a.m., we make the official move to Sports Radio 1290. Anyways, let's move on, talk about hockey. That's why we're here. Gentlemen, we did Who's Hot in the first segment tonight. Here's Who's Not. The Edmonton Oilers.
Please, Drew, can we start off with... I know you wanted to start off with the Oilers, but I'm ready to go here. Can we talk about the Devils first?
I turn the mic over to you as we're getting...
All right,
okay, okay. The New Jersey Devils this year... Are just a comedy of theirs. I mean, tonight they played the Colorado Avalanche, Richie, in Colorado. They're 2-6-1. I mean, I've caught two games now of this team, and keep in mind, the Devils are without one of their huge free agent signings, Anton Volchenkov. They're without Bryce Salvador.
Yep. And they're thin on defense before that.
Right, and they were already thin on defense. And they benched Ilya Kovalchuk on the weekend. And I actually missed the first part of that game. He was benched.
They got bombed.
Whether it was John McClain or Lou Lamoriello, it was probably
no,
McClain.
This is the report.
The report was McClain.
You're talking about Larry Brooks' report.
The report was that
today?
He was 10 minutes late for a meeting, yeah. And then McClain suspended him without talking to Lamoriello.
Yeah, that's right. And it was McClain's decision unilaterally.
Right.
And at first, Bob McKenzie, you know, who we like and trust immensely, yesterday reported that he had missed the meeting altogether. Larry Brooks, who's really on the ground there in New Jersey, you know, by virtue of his employment with the New York Post, reported that Kovalchuk was 10 minutes late to a team meeting.
Okay, and that's what we were talking about this on the weekend. We all thought that, but some of the reports were that they weren't confirming it, of course, because they said it was an internal matter. But regardless
Always
of that, they benched Kovalchuk. And they lost 6-1 to Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now you have a team that 9 games in has won 2 games. Your $100 million man has been benched or made a healthy scratch. Mm-hmm. Not benched, but he was sitting in the press box. Okay. So now you have a rookie head coach, John McClain, very familiar with the Devils, but you now have a rookie head coach who has now... Whether or not anyone wants to admit it, in New Jersey is the number one coach on the hot seat. We know that New Jersey will Lou Lamoriello, that is GM of the Devils, will gladly replace a coach after 10 games.
Absolutely.
Robbie Fatorik, was it Rob? It was no, it wasn't Robbie Fatorik. It was
Fatorik, but wasn't Fatorik with like 10
Larry
games left in the season?
I mean, right. Sorry, Fatorik was 10 games in the season, but who was 10 games into the season? Fedoruk was fired.
Julien. Yeah.
Okay, so right now you have a team that totally is not playing as a unit. I don't personally believe it's Kovalchuk's fault, but in the games I've been watching, when you have Oliver Magnan-Grenier, Matt Tarmina, and Alexander Urbom, three rookies on your defense, there's a problem here. I mean, the New Jersey Devils right
now... Cap management's a problem.
The New Jersey Devils have basically a rookie core with, you know, going into the season with a combined zero games. And when you're in that situation, and then you're also having players, you know, basically missing practice, and not only just players, they're best players.
You have a veteran.
You got to take over this team. John McLean, something's not working there.
I was gonna say, you have a veteran team with a rookie coach and a guy that some of them have played with. Guys, remember that. I mean, if you've played with a guy and then your coach is, it's like Joe Girardi and the Yankees coaching, you know, Derek Jeter and those guys. I mean, how much do they listen to you? I mean. You know, by all accounts, some guys, Martin Brodeur is a bigger leader probably in that team than John McLean, and now John McLean's telling Martin Brodeur what to do. So that's a little bit of an issue. You know, it's hard to foresee these issues coming. Winning cures a lot of problems, and right now the Devils aren't winning. Do I think they'll eventually win? Yeah, of course. But, can we get back to the Kovalchuk issue for a second there?
Yeah, because that's really...
The Golden Mail had a little chit-chat on whether it was worth it or not, and I got to be honest with you guys. I have no issue with it at all. He's 10 minutes late to a meeting. The guy's getting paid $100 million for his contract, about $10 million a year. Be on time to the meeting. If you're not on time to the meeting, the coach can bench you. And you know what? He shouldn't have to go to Lamoriello to decide if he can bench a player because it's his team. And don't tell me it's the wrong decision. He needs to, you know, assert his weight somehow. If Kovalchuk comes 10 minutes late to a meeting and then comes 10 minutes late to the next meeting, where do you draw the line? You draw the line right away. He made a good decision.
Absolutely.
Whether he's a good coach, I don't know. But that decision, I have no issue with. And him getting criticized for that decision, to me, is utterly ridiculous.
Why isn't anybody talking about the fact that Kovalchuk, who's getting paid to be, really he's getting paid to be the face of this franchise, has the nerve and the gall to show up 10 minutes late? Yep. You have to be there 10 minutes early. You have to be on the ice 10 minutes early.
Right.
You have to be the leader and the example for the rest of your teammates to follow.
That's why I don't give him that money.
The money is whatever. They gave him the money. He needs to know that you got paid like a superstar. Now you got to act and play like a superstar. No questions asked. You're not feeling it? It doesn't matter. You get out there and you give 110% at all time.
Guys, I think there's a few things here. First of all, some of Kovalchuk's bad habits from earlier on in his career. This is a guy that has been knocked for not playing very well defensively. Nobody with half a brain in the NHL will deny that he is arguably the best sniper in the league, one of the best snipers in the league. Whether you want to say he's the best,
he's
or
probably
one of the best.
Third behind Ovechkin and Stamkos.
Right, and I think he is number two behind Ovechkin in goals over the last 5 years.
He's getting paid like he's the best sniper in the league.
And based on that, not a good sign right off the bat, because when Ilya Kovalchuk was traded and they gave up a lot for him, Jamie Langemurder, the captain of the team, was a completely different player. And you guys know that I follow this team religiously more than any other team. And if you've watched the New Jersey Devils even on a casual basis, you'd know that Jamie Langemurder is one of the hardest working players on the team. He's not most talented like Parise, but he's still a 50, 60-point player. And he hasn't been the same player. And this year, that's carried over. And I'm very convinced that Ilya Kovalchuk has brought some negative energy to the team. And you can't deny it. I mean,
I agree with that.
New Jersey Devils were horrible towards the end of the season going into the playoffs. They were horrible in the playoffs. And this year, they've just been awful. And Kovalchuk's playing fine.
Whose team is it? I mean, isn't that question need to be asked? Is this Zach Parise's team or is this Ilya Kovalchuk's team?
Should be
Zach. Can it be both of their teams?
It really should be Zach Parise's team, because if you're talking about a guy who usually brings it on every night and performs on a consistent basis, it's Zach Parise. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, they decided that, maybe it's because they overpaid to get Kovalchuk.
I was just going to say, that's just it, in my opinion. I mean, that played a huge factor. The amount that they gave up for him, and then, of course, all the fines and then the draft picks they had to give up later on because of the whole contract. I mean, at that point, I guess it was a point of no return in Lou Lamoriello's mind. If you give up all those draft picks and Cormier and Bergfors, who's been a healthy scratch a number of times in Atlanta, Johnny Oduya, who's played significant minutes there, and... obviously he looked back and thought if he made a mistake, he had to make up for it somehow, and giving Kovalchuk that contract was part of the reason. Now, again, guys, he signed for 10 years, and there's a lot more time for them to figure things out. It's only been 10 games. So let's not have a knee-jerk reaction here. But clearly, Kovalchuk came into camp with a sense of entitlement. And sitting him down because he's late for a meeting to me is
takes
is,
him down
is,
a few pegs.
Right.
Oh, I boggles my mind that this guy doesn't get it. He just doesn't get it. You can't do that. It's period. End the conversation.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Drew, because when in Atlanta, when he wasn't playing defense, you could say, oh, his coaches never pushed him to play defense, which they really didn't. Bob Hartley, John Anderson are not defensive coaches.
They needed every single goal of him.
But, as he, I mean, they needed all you see these forwards, some of them at this point, you know, back in the day, you had to convert Stevie Yzerman to be defensive forward like Scotty Bowman did. Nowadays, forwards want to play defense. You know, honestly, even at the youth levels, when I played hockey, compared to the coaches, the kids that we coached and Michael coached last year, kids play defense a heck of a lot better than they used to. And you go into, and talking about the NHL, Kovalchuk could have put it upon himself to play better defense those years in Atlanta. He chose not to. And now maybe he's continuing to choose not to, and bad habits die hard.
And at this point, he chose not to because nobody in Atlanta, nobody was there to ride his ass.
That's what I just said.
But I mean, Drew, and also, you know, at this point in his career, Ilya Kovalchuk, you know, I as a fan, I was happy that they got him because he is, once again, talent like that, you just don't teach that. He has talent. Like, what he reminds me of is like a Jaromir Jagr. Just the way he makes things look easy. But, you know, Kovalchuk at this point in the career, he's still, you know, overhandling the puck. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, really, shouldn't he be taking all of advice from, look at their coaching staff in New Jersey, John McLean, mm-hmm. Adam Oates, and Larry Robinson.
Larry Robinson should be the head coach probably, but, yeah.
Right.
So you're saying Hall of Famer, Cup winner.
Well, I mean, if they're obviously coaching this guy, I mean, when you're struggling, you're trying to get this guy to do more, and he either isn't getting the message or he just is basically, you know, telling these guys, oh, well, you know, I'm not here to play defense. I'm not here to, you know, make other players better. I'm Ilya Kovalchuk, and I'm here to score 50 goals.
It'll be interesting to see how they play. Goals, but what about this point, guys? You signed him to the big deal as the player he was. What's his incentive to suddenly change?
You know, aside from professionalism, I understand what you're saying.
Again, I mean, is he going to change 8 years into his career? It's very rare.
You know, I don't need him to change his game so much.
But he's been scoring goals since they got him.
We talked about Jaromir Jagr. Never changed.
Never changed.
Jaromir Jagr never became a defensive dynamo.
No, but I don't need him to change his game. I need him to change the influence he has in the locker room. That's where I need him to step
up. If you sign him
up
to do that, Drew, then you're putting your money in a bad investment.
That might be the case. But, I mean, I think that the player does bear a little bit of responsibility.
Well, I agree
at
that.
Point in time.
I'm just saying, the player does, but the team should have known that. Therefore, if they are blaming it on the player, they should have known better. Because sure, he incurred some of that responsibility, but the team should as well.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. New Jersey at San Jose later on tonight. You know, tough place to win a game. We'll see how they play. Let's move on to Anaheim. The Ducks defense.
We forgot Edmonton.
I know. We'll go back to Edmonton. Okay. You know, the Ducks defense, and we touched on it last week, has given up the most goals in the NHL, 33 goals. Jonas Hiller has faced the second most shots with 257. Any sign they're turning this thing around?
Well, a little bit, Drew. I mean, they gave up a ton of shots those first few games. They've been better since they got Tony Lubin back. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, they've missed Cam Fowler to injury, but they have played better since that first four-game road trip, I believe it was, when they played in Detroit, and they played in, I think it was Columbus, and they played in, I forget, somewhere else, too. They have played better. They went to Philly. They beat Philly. They at home, they beat Vancouver. The big line is playing well. Love all three of those guys together. Jonas Hiller is a tremendous goalie. Sure, they can't allow him to have that many shots there every game, but they are improving. Are they ever going to be a solid defensive team like they were with that defense right now? No. But getting guys back healthy like Fowler and then like Andy Sutton and having them with Vishnovsky and Lidman makes them more respectable. They can score goals and they have a really good goalie. So you know, I slid them in for 8th this year.
Yep.
And Remus gave me a really hard time about that. They're playing a little bit better now, so a little bit less of a hard time. But there's some talent there on offense. They need to play a little bit better of a defensive style. So I think that never could improve, but I don't think it'll improve and shoot them into anything about the bottom third of the league.
And just to add to that point, I think the Anaheim Ducks this year, and we talk about them a lot, but we should. They were Stanley Cup champions 4 years ago, and they do have, you know, that amazing top line.
Oh, it's
this
great.
Team, though, is I think one of the reasons for this, aside from the injuries, is Rich, and this is something that we love to bring up on this show, is that without Chris Pronger, without Scott Niedermayer, I mean, you've got Lubomir Vishnovsky as an offensive defenseman, but right. This team is, when the Getzlaff-Perry line isn't on, I think puck possession is something for this team watching the Ducks. That is something why, that is a reason, lack of puck possession, which is going to hurt the team. I think on Anaheim this year, they're going to win games 4-3. They're not they're not going to be more of a, you know, a team that controls the play and you know, hammers teams on the power play and stuff like that. And you know what? Jonas Hiller does a very good job in Anaheim, and he's a very underrated goalie. Probably got all of his props last year, which was his first big year. But, you know, Anaheim's got their defense will improve, and I think Cam Fowler, they've made it clear he's going to stay.
They have made it clear. You know what? As he, how did he drop that far?
Yeah.
We talked about him last week and the things I learned this week, and I mean, he hasn't played, obviously, since, but...
Remember how much Pierre Maguire loved him in the World Junior Tournament, that American team? There was a lot of guys. Derek Stepan was another guy that...
Jack Campbell.
Yeah, and Cam Fowler, I think, was the top-ranked defenseman, and then he slipped to Gudbranson, right?
And Gudbranson got drafted ahead of him, so did the left-hand Brandon Gormley.
People look for flaws in people. I mean, you saw Cam Fowler. You knew he was going to be an all-around good player, but, you know, did he have the upside of maybe...
Drew, he's soft and not great defensively and smaller player. But you know what? You can't teach those skills, right?
The talent is there. You're looking for reasons not.
Apparently,
to
draft he had bad interviews too. You know what?
Watch the game.
You're also at number 12, Drew.
Yeah.
You can get a guy like that. Well, I mean, that's a cinch, isn't it?
Well, just I don't understand that. But and that's in all sports. Watch the guy perform. Look how he plays on the ice.
Doesn't this have
in pressure-packed situations?
You know, Drew. I mean, Richie's really high on Mark Stahl, and you know. A lot of people are high on all stalls, but I mean, this has the kind of markings of that type of draft pick, where a guy comes into the NHL with the Anaheim Ducks, they need a defenseman. He comes in and he plays great, and then all of a sudden, you know, he gets injured, and now you're actually missing him. So it's just like Mark Stahl. When Mark Stahl, he was drafted fairly high in the first round.
Ten. Remember, he was Sidney Crosby year because he was a lottery. The Rangers got 10.
Right. Yeah. But I mean,
he fell.
He couldn't have been the top defenseman drafted that year. No. There's always a defenseman in the top, you know, five or six.
Yeah.
Remus will check up on that.
That was the 2005 draft, I think.
Yeah. Remus will check up on that.
Carey Price that year, too.
Let's quickly go to Tampa Bay. Simone Gagné, 6 games played. He's had 0 points in those 6 games. He's been day-to-day with a neck injury. He hasn't played the last couple games. He's currently -8 plus-minus-wise.
Yeah.
Is he no longer sort of a second elite player?
I think you're jumping to conclusions there, Drew. Again, I think he certainly could be. It's a new environment. Let him get acclimated to his team and his linemates. That was a bad hit he took there, and he's injured right now day-to-day with a neck injury.
Yeah.
But, you know, I found it odd his comments at the beginning. You know, I'm going to be in Tampa for a year, see what happens. He has since kind of...
Yeah.
Retracted those comments and said he'd like to stay there long term. I'm not so sure if that's true or not, but he doesn't seem to be comfortable there. Give him time. But you know, sometimes what we do, Drew, as analysts, we take out the personal aspects of a transaction. I mean, he's been in Philly his whole career.
Right.
He's only known Philly. He's only known the Philly system. He's only known the Philly line mates. And right now it's something different. And so maybe that change hasn't been as easy on him as you'd like to think it would be. And that's played a factor. Talent-wise, if he stays healthy talent-wise, I think the talent's still there. So I maybe he's not the top point-per-game player that he was before with a great skater, but he's still a very good all-around player. He's a good shot, really good defensively. So I certainly wouldn't write Simon Gagné off, but we might have underestimated the importance of the environment he's in.
How long the transition was going to take for him. Final topic or final category of who's not right now, and that's the Edmonton Oilers. Got off to that great start to the season, 2 wins in their first 2 games. Maybe the young players are going to come together a little bit quicker than anyone thought. Well, they've fallen back down to reality. Well. They've lost their last 5 in a row now.
Mm-hmm.
They've given up 24 goals in those 5 losses. You know, the question really that's been bantered around is, should Taylor Hall stay with the Oilers this coming season? Do the Oilers have it? You know, how do you see the rest of the year playing out for the Oilers?
Well, first of all, Steve Tambolini and Tom Rennie both said he's staying.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we know he is staying. I think, I mean, the thing with Taylor Hall in Edmonton and Jordan Eberle and Magnus Parvi is there's tons of excitement in Edmonton and. The fans in Edmonton and, you know, Taylor Hall fans, whatever, Oilers fans, they have to be patient. I mean, Taylor Hall, even though you could say, like, he came into the NHL with the same skill set as Stamkos and Tavares and all this, he is going to take a really long time to start scoring goals on a nightly basis. And it could happen next week. But, I mean, you have to be patient with how his impact on the team is going to make the team better. So I think he, you know, I mean, regardless if I think he should stay, he is staying. But I think you just have to be patient. I think it's pretty clear that the coaches are being patient. But I think fans now, based on how Sidney Crosby did it in Pittsburgh and Ovechkin did in Washington and all that, all these 18-year-olds, I think people want to see, you know, results right away, and I just don't think it's going to happen.
There aren't many Crosbys and Ovechkins. Even Stamkos, I think, scored 13 goals his rookie year. I think Ryan Whitney said it best, Drew, in an article referring to the troubles that some of the youngsters have had. And he said, you know, you preach patience, you preach patience, you preach patience. Try saying that about a couple times fast like I just did.
nicely done.
And then you lose five games in a row, and all the patience goes out the window. And you know what? The fans can react as they do, especially in this era of instant news. But all that's important is that Steve Tambellini, more importantly, Tom Rennie, a patient guy, a guy who knows hockey, knows how to develop young players, just stays the course because the talent's there. You know, you look at the rookie years of a lot of guys. Look at Mark Messier, a guy who I compare Taylor Hall to in terms of the style of play. That guy, rookie year, I don't think he scored. I think at WHA, I don't think he scored over six goals. So, you know, that's a first year. Let him develop, and you're going to play out those first 3 years quickly because you know he's a superstar. Let it happen. Just relax. And I think for the most part, Oiler Nation is, but I think people just want a story.
Well, that certainly wouldn't be unusual for media to a media created or media driven story.
And Drew, you know, we have to factor in too. I mean, if we were making an argument for him to stay, you know, if that was an issue here, which it's not because he will stay.
Right.
But you can make the argument that he really is at his age too good for the AHL. I think he wanted
to go to the AHL
CHL. No joke about it, but AHL. I mean,
couldn't play in the
or
AHL.
Any other option.
Not allowed. Yeah.
So junior, I mean,
yeah, I mean,
junior here. I mean, come on,
he's got nothing for junior.
Well, would you send him to the World Juniors though, or is he? You can release him to the World Junior team.
Why?
I'm just throwing out the options that the Oilers have.
You don't release him to the World Junior team.
Okay, so he's an Oiler for the rest of the year, and you're in both your books.
Yes.
Okay, let's leave it there. It's the top of the hour. When we come back, a score update, maybe a mayoral election update.
Oh.
All your favorite segments, six things, news and notes, rapid fire, cheers and jeers, 1 hour left. Stay with us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on 92.9 KICK FM. You notice the Halloween theme in my music selections yet?
I haven't.
Really?
Monster
Thriller?
Mash next.
Say that again, Remus?
Are you going to play Monster Mash, yes? Next, please do.
I'll try. I'll see if I can. I was thinking maybe doing all Meatloaf Hour.
Oh.
Ooh, I like that.
Please. I thought you might. I know that you'd do anything for love, Richard, but you just won't do that. Welcome back to the Legal Curve Radio Show, shortly after 8 o'clock. In case you missed the big announcement at 7:30 tonight, we'll be taking our talents from the good folks here at KICK FM to 1290 Sports Radio 1290 starting on Saturday, November the 6th at 10 a.m. So, you know, for those of you who are used to tuning in Wednesday nights, just switch your Wednesday night plans with your Saturday morning plans and tune in to us on 1290 Sports Radio 1290 every Saturday morning beginning November 6th at 10 o'clock in the morning. Time for a score update. Okay, the computer's loaded. In New York tonight, on home ice, the Rangers fans are not going to be impressed. Atlanta 5, New York Rangers 2. Richard, the goal scorers.
Well, you have 5. I only have 4, so you're quicker than I am. You can give me the fifth goal scorer. The first four, Brian Little, talented red-handed shooting youngster there, has the first goal. Evander Kane, another talented player there. Second goal, Nicholas Bergfors, the player acquired in the Kovalchuk trade that we spoke about earlier. The third goal, Eric Bolton, the enforcer with the fourth goal. Who popped the fifth one, Drew?
Burmistov on a snapshot.
Signed about 3 weeks ago.
There you go. And then
an entry-level
for the
deal.
For the Rangers, hard-hitting and off-hitting, Ryan Callahan with a goal, as well as Mr. Stir the Pot, Sean Avery. If you looked at that Rangers roster, though, I'll tell you, I don't know where you're getting goals from there.
Oh, slim pickings there in New York. In Carolina tonight, I believe this is the Hurricanes' first home game of the year.
Yes, it is.
Home opener.
Home opener. Washington is up 1-0 on Carolina with about 15 and a half minutes to go in the third period.
Who got that goal?
That goal was by Hendricks from an assist from Steckel and Erskine.
We haven't really talked about the fact that Washington doesn't look so hot right now.
No, and you know what? And Elliot Friedman mentioned it on his 30 Things blog post on Monday, that Ted Leontis is sort of already stirring the pot up unnecessarily, according to, based on Friedman's analysis of the situation. Leontis, of course, the owner of the Capitals.
Right.
In Montreal tonight, it is 3-1 Montreal over New York. There's 3 minutes to go in the second period.
First half of a home-and-home, and Andre Markov, there's rumors he's coming back Friday.
Which is huge.
According to Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette, he's coming back Friday.
And he's been on the show before, Pat Hickey. James Wisniewski, player that we still don't really understand. I mean, obviously, a little cap reasons there, but was traded from the Ducks to Islanders. He's been a nice, pleasant surprise for the Islanders so far this season, especially with the Mark Stride injury. The scored for the Islanders, but the Habs have three, and Carey Price is shutting the door again. Matthew Darche, Travis Moen, and Thomas Pekanik.
If you're a good team, or even if you have sights on making the playoffs, as Montreal does, you have to beat the Islanders on home ice.
True, and Drew, they look. You know what? It's tough to bring momentum from 1 year to the next. I don't necessarily believe that's even possible. Mm-hmm. But the Habs look an awful lot like they did last year, don't they?
They really did. Yeah. They really do. You know, Giontov's named captain. Everyone was kind of, you know, questioning that. Was he the right choice? And really, the three big signings on forward from last year are all playing great. And well, Andre Kostitsyn
and Giontov and Gomez really
only have
goals. Only have two goals each. I mean, right. they're trying to get them going, but.
But Eddie, I mean, you know what? Right. Kamilari's been good. Kostitsyn, obviously, we talked about last week in 16, they learned this week. And think about it, guys. No Markov. Price has been a huge positive there. But Thomas Pekanik, I mean, they just have guys contributing, and some of their best players still have more to come.
And again, another guy, too, on that team who isn't necessarily lighting it up is Subban, but he's been playing well.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of people predicted 40 points out of the guy. You know, whatever. Who cares if he gets 30 or 40? He's playing well and he's developing.
I think the point is that him, the more he's not noticed, is a better thing for him.
Absolutely. Yep. As a defenseman, I think that's often the case. Pittsburgh at Tampa Bay, 2 minutes to go in the second period. It is a 3-all tie, high-scoring affair there in Tampa Bay, as you might expect with those two teams.
Pittsburgh goals, Craig Adams, Matt Cook, Pascal Dupuis, all three of them aren't exactly what you'd call
Sidney Crosby.
Winger worthy, but some of them do play a fair amount of time with Crosby.
Yep.
Dupuis played a fair amount of time over the past few years. In Tampa Bay, Tyrell, Purcell, and LeCavalier have answered.
Richie, is that not Aaron Asham's debut there?
Is it his debut?
Portage La Prairie's Aaron Asham. Yes. I think that's his first game.
He, you know, Portage La Prairie's Aaron Asham, he was signed to Pittsburgh, and they, from what I heard, they made some you know, nice promises for him to get some opportunities to play with the likes of Sidney Crosby up there on the right side.
Wow, that's a hell of a good
promise. He's got a pretty good shot, actually, for a scrapper. He's got a pretty good shot. He's got better puck skills than you might think, and he's tough. He's a good signing there. Once he's healthy, that's going to help.
Hey, he was a key part of the fourth line on Philly.
I like his game.
He's a grinder.
I like his game. And in the other game of the night, we have Chicago and LA. I think the score's updated. It's LA 1, Chicago 1. Goals from Justin Williams and Jake Dowell. In goal, Marty Turco and Jonathan Bernier. Seeing some, you know, Jonathan Quick's played pretty well out of the shoot here, but Jonathan Bernier is the next one in LA, as they say. And he's in nets tonight, and it's 1-1 just near the end of the first period. We have a call, Drew? Can't hear you.
My mic's not on. That's why you can't hear me. Now you can hear me. We have a caller on the line who wants to talk about the Penguins. Mark, welcome to the Illegal Curve Radio Show.
Well, it's H-Bomb. I wouldn't be talking about anything else other than the Penguins.
We know that.
But I just want to throw it out there, guys. I was looking earlier on NHL.com, and the Penguins only had 12 skaters dressed. Is that possible, or is there some sort of typo?
It's got to be. 12 skaters for the game tonight, you mean?
Remus, can you check that?
Remus will check that. That's got to be a typo. I mean, we'd hear more. It would have been, the message boards would have been a buzz if the Penguins only dressed 12 skaters tonight.
That's right. So it must have just been something wrong. And because, just as a concerned fan here, I figured, I mean, my A1 hockey team dresses more players than that, you know?
on Yahoo Sports right now, I have 18 players who have time on ice.
Oh, okay, all right.
Well, you know what? The thing is, though, H-Bomb, the truth is, with the NHL the way it is now, things like that catch your eye. Because it happens.
No, honestly, I never would have even counted the number until, the whole thing with Jersey and all this stuff happened. So, they brought that to our attention.
And actually, that allows me to bring up an interesting article that was written by Mike Colligan, who's on the Ustream chat all the time, has his own show.
You're going to be on the show on Sunday.
He'll be on his radio show on Sunday.
Look at you, Richie.
And he writes for the Hockey Writers, amongst other places, and he wrote a terrific article, H-Bomb, detailing the Penguins cap situation and the reasoning behind why they sent Eric Tangrady down to the ECHL and not the AHL, partly due to location. And he explains the ramifications of the long-term injury reserve and how it was utilized to deal with Jordan Staal, why they waited, why they would put him on IR before, why they would put him on IR after the final roster is due. It's worth Google for it. It's worth reading. It explains how detailed the cap is based on the CBA and how close the Penguins cut it to the cap. And so your question is a good one.
Well, thank you. I will have to check that out because also I have Eric Tangrady in my hockey pool, and that doesn't bode well.
So. Well, now he's down the AHL, yeah, again. So
ECHL.
Surprise. All right, guys. Thanks. Have a good show.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks very much.
Hold on, Richie. Well, you just said that.
No, what happened was is that because of the cap, they sent him down to the ECHL because the ECHL was closely located to Pittsburgh as opposed to Wilkes-Barre. Since then he's now been demoted to the AHL now.
Right, and I mean, that's a little bit surprising, but they signed Aaron Asham, so wasn't that the main reason why he was sent down, because of Asham?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be playing similarly, right, both right wing, I believe.
Yeah.
Still to come tonight, we have, as we mentioned, New Jersey at San Jose.
Yes.
And in the mayoral election, results are not filtering in very quickly, and right now we have a four-way tie for mayor.
Brad Gross is giving him a run.
Exactly.
And there would be nothing wrong with having four mayors in a city, right? Why not? It's, you know, mayoral run by committee. There's nothing wrong with that. We'd probably have some better decision making.
Well, if they tie, I'm all in favor of myself for dictator. It's a good option.
Is that four-way tie at zero, Drew?
Yes, it is. It's a four-way tie at zero.
Well,
right,
Drew,
now.
I mean, you know, you and Richie are both you know, political science guys, so you'll know this term. But you guys have already been running the show as an oligarchy anyway. So
very funny. It's time for six things we learned this week.
Six things we've learned this week.
Just before we start, I want to say that that's my favorite intro that you've done. I know.
I like rapid fire better.
I know Cheers and Jeers and Rapid Fire get a lot of it, but I like that one. It's simple, and I like the Undertaker bell in there.
It's very Halloween-esque. If it would be appropriate if it was Halloween, that it is Halloween, but if you did it specifically for Halloween. But considering you did it 3 months ago, it's just odd now.
And the Undertaker bell there, you know, that makes me to the point, can you believe that when we were kids, they actually had a guy named Paul Bearer?
No, Paul, he's back, Richard. What are you talking about?
He's back.
You just proved live on Winnipeg Radio that you watched WWE.
Yeah, Drew, out!
I've already admitted that I'm a WWE fan, and if you watch
that,
if you watch WWE Bragging Rights, The Undertaker was buried by the members of Nexus.
That I didn't know, but Richard, come on.
Paul Bearer came back. Kane and Undertaker, their brothers. And they fought in a buried alive match. And
didn't they have those like 10 years ago, 15 years ago? Has anything changed?
Well, I'll tell you what, Richard. You're all on your high and mighty horse, but we all know that you spend every Thursday night sitting at home wearing your tank top and your wife beater watching Jersey Shore and saying, it's T-shirt time.
Me and Remus have already talked about on air. We've agreed that The Miz is our favorite wrestler. The Miz. He's awesome.
The Miz. The first thing I learned this week.
First, Richard, go ahead.
Well, the first thing I learned this week, Drew, is that the Leafs coach, Ron Wilson, plays to the media far more than he needs to with regards to lineup decisions. And I think that by doing so, he puts far more pressure on his players. Case in point, you know, sitting Tyler Bozak the other day and then sitting Phil Kessel a little bit before that. The truth is, guys, he did score last night. And they had changed lines up. Kuhlman went to the top line. Versteeg dropped down to the second line. But the truth is, guys, I mean, Tyler Bozak's a very talented young player. I really like his game. I really have grown to like his game, and the more I watch him, the more I like the way he plays, and he's a very good passer. If you're going to bench him during the game, fine, but don't come out after the game talking to the media and kind of putting him down and using that way to motivate him. Once in a while, that works, but when you do it like with him and you do it with Kessel, you're just giving the media so much to write about and so much to talk about, and it's going to become distracting for the player, especially in a media market like Toronto. I think it's unnecessary. He needs to pick his spots a little bit more. I think he's going a little bit overboard lately.
Okay.
Why do they keep showing Brian Burke every 5 minutes when the Leafs are on TV? Like, show him once, and that's it. We don't need to see Brian Burke in his white dress shirt every 5 minutes.
Ezzy.
It's unbelievable.
This is the first thing you learned this week. The Philadelphia Flyers have not really exploded offensively yet this season until yesterday, a 6-3 win over Buffalo. And when this team is awake, they are the most dangerous offensive team in the league.
The Philadelphia Flyers.
Is that a thesis or a thing you learned this week?
The Philadelphia Flyers, when they play a good team like Buffalo, I mean, you know, there's some issues on defense, but when the Philadelphia Flyers score 6 goals, you watch the team and you're like, why don't they do this every game?
I totally agree.
And so far this year, they've been sleeping a little bit, and when you can let a guy like Simone Gagné go and get Matt Walker back, I mean, Walker is a tough, good defenseman, but Simone Gagné is, you know, a top-level hockey
player.
Scored
40 goals before, yeah.
And exactly, and, you know, Philly, if they find their game, you know, everyone knows they're super talented offensively, but I mean, I think they are the most talented offensively when all four forward lines are going. I mean, look at Mike Richards, Jeff Carter last night had 3 points, but Mike Richards has been pretty quiet this year.
Yep.
Danny Briere, there it seems
so
like
much talent.
You know, this team just has to get it going, get a nice run going, well, and you know they're going to compete for the division title.
You know,
especially with New Jersey doing terribly this
that's
year.
That's exactly right. I know we have to rush here, Drew, but they turned it on last year in the playoffs. So you know, so much for it. You can't turn it on in the playoffs. They have, and right now it looks like they're sleepwalking again.
Barely
the
made it
season.
Though. I mean, you can't turn it on unless you make it, and they barely made it. They like a little more wiggle room this year.
For sure.
The Ottawa Senators general manager Brian Murray continually hurts his leverage in trade negotiations by pledging his willingness to shake up his roster.
And I absolutely think that's the second thing I learned this week, Drew. He's got to stop doing this. I mean, right now you look at his roster, it's not exactly one that you're going to be looking to trade guys off of. I mean, maybe some people will be interested in Jason Spezza. Some people probably aren't based on that salary, but his skills. Regardless, Drew, negotiating in public is generally a sign of desperation. And you look at his roster, and it's probably not likely that somebody wants to deal for him. For many of the players on his team. And when he starts going out in public like that, that probably is an indictment of the roster he's built. And I think it's unnecessary because it doesn't help his leverage at all. It only shows that he's desperate.
What a terrible start for that team. Wow.
Well, you know, Ezzy, I mean, when you allow more goals than you score and you end up, I believe, sixth in the Western, or sixth or fifth in the Eastern Conference,
yeah.
You know, what do you expect the next year when you lose your best defensive defenseman? It's a team that's okay, but there's nothing special about it, and they need better goaltending. And last year they got lucky
considering
their goaltending.
And they got the win, you know, yesterday for Gonchar, who happens to be my next.
Good segue, Ezzy.
Right.
Sergei Gonchar, who played in his 1,000th game last night, should be strongly considered for the Hall of Fame after he retires.
Okay, and this is my rationale behind it. Sergei Gonchar, you know, has been in the league since the mid-90s. I believe he was drafted 94, 95, something like
Capitals.
That. By the Capitals, and played before he went to Pittsburgh the first year after the lockout and signed the 5-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't as well known on Washington up until, you know, the early 2000s. He got his cup in Pittsburgh obviously 2 years ago, and you know, Sergei Gonchar has played in an era with, you know, Nicholas Lidstrom, Scott Niedermeyer, Chris Pronger, and you know, he doesn't quite have the defensive game,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was having an argument with someone about this yesterday. I think, especially with a Stanley Cup and some more experience later on in his career, he's got the stats. Sergei Gonchar has had, you know, an immediate impact on Ottawa. I know his point totals aren't crazy, but Pittsburgh, on Pittsburgh, he's been instantly missed, and the outcry of support from Pittsburgh fans was incredible.
Well,
You know, I strongly believe that that he, once his career is over, whether he plays one more year or two more years, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Drew, this is the segment we have to hurry up. Let's go a little bit long. Remus, can you run through Gonchar's career points year after year quickly?
Year after year?
Yeah, starting his rookie year.
Starting in his rookie year, he had 41 points in 78 games. Then he had 30, 21, 31, 54, 57, 59, 67, 58, 58, 67, 65, and then he was injured 19, 50, and then this year he has 5 points in 9 games.
I mean, you look at those numbers, Drew, and I think Ezzy raises a heck of a good argument. We should talk more about that one of these shows, because that's a good one.
And Richie, I think without that cup, then...
Fair point. Best defenseman on the team, too. Best defenseman on the cup-winning team.
Always the best defenseman.
And he took Capitals to the... Not took. He was on the Capitals team that made it to the 98 finals against Detroit.
Yep. And I think that point, though, is valid, that he has been overshadowed by a really good era for defensemen.
Yeah.
But
look at those points.
The numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah.
Flames forward Michael Backlund is becoming a useful and, more importantly, a cheap useful player for a Calgary team short on youth and offensive ability.
You know, I like what I've seen in Michael Backlund. They're playing him now. They're shifting him around a bit. And he's a guy who can skate. He's got really good skating skills, really good edges. By that, I mean he can turn on a dime. And he can handle the puck pretty well. He's a smart player. And I think, Drew, in a team that has a lot of veterans who are paid a fair amount of money, a youthful presence like him, who's cheap, which is especially important for a team very close to the cap like them, and a guy whose ability to get better, which is especially important when you have an older team who's generally not playing, you know, who's going to tail off eventually, he could be a very, very big wild card there. Now, not like a crazy talent, but a very talented player, a useful player, and a cheap player. And I like his game, I've seen improvements since last year.
Ezzy, final one here. The Vancouver Canucks are so talented on forward, in goal, and on defense that people are forgetting that Sammy Salo, Dan Hamhuis, and Keith Ballard are all out with injuries.
Right, and right now on defense, they've still got Andrew Alberts apparently might be missing the next game, but right now they've got Aaron Rome, And Andrew Albert's on defense. Two guys that, you know, are still, you know.
We've talked about them in this show before.
Right. Aaron Rome is still kind of developing as an everyday defenseman, you know, for his days with the Blues. But
that's kind.
Right. but, I mean, Vancouver, wow, is their talent on this team. A guy that we talked about, two off-season acquisitions that we talked about that were really going to help this team. And I mean, you know, you think, okay, Rafi Torres, Manny Malhotra, how good can these guys be? These guys were exactly what the team needed.
Yep.
And once Keith Ballard gets back, once Sammy Salo gets back, once Danny Hamhuis gets back, this team is going to be very good. And I can't wait for some of those games later on in the season between Vancouver, Chicago, Vancouver, Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is Vancouver has all the players this year to have a nice long cup run.
So I picked them.
Yeah.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, NHL news and notes, rapid fire still to come, cheers and jeers. And, of course, at the top of the hour, it's the Kick FM election special. And so far in the ballots, Judy is beating Sam. You're listening to 92.9 Kick FM.
Dracula and his son. The steam was rocking, overtaking the sound.
8:23 in the evening. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Radio Show. There's a little monster mash for you, Remus.
Thank you, thank you.
You're welcome.
My favorite song right there.
Really?
Love it. Great Halloween song.
You did the monster mash.
They did the mash.
Wow, that's definitely going in next week, so whatever segment we decide to put that into. Anyways, it's time for...
They played the monster
mash.
Oh, right.
The monster mash, yeah. I could talk about that song all day.
It's time for news and notes.
NHL. NHL. News and notes.
Let's start in Phoenix, where, well, it might be a bit of a... Sorry, Richard, you're already frantically waving. Go ahead.
We're going to talk about the Phoenix attendance issue in a second, Drew. But can we talk about everywhere in this game?
Yeah, go ahead.
Watching Columbus.
You mean everywhere, attendance-wise, everywhere.
Nobody's in Anaheim, nobody's in Atlanta, nobody's in Columbus. And don't get me messages on Twitter and Facebook saying, there's nobody there, guys. There's 8,000 people at these games in weekdays. I understand it's weekdays. I don't care. 8,000 people to see Rick and Nash, 8,000 people to see Ryan Getzlaf. That's enough. I mean, Phoenix is a joke in itself. Let's be honest. Let's be candid. It's a joke. Drew's going to talk about the attendance there, but it's not the only issue. I mean, people talk about, oh, you know, if a team like a city like Winnipeg or Quebec City doesn't get Phoenix, they'll get other organizations. Of course they will, because nobody's going. These teams must be losing a boatload of money. There goes the soapbox. Keep going.
Okay, there you go. I mean, the numbers in Phoenix last week were woeful. I mean, it was Thursday night. They drew about 8,000 people. Sorry, yeah, they drew 6,000 people on Thursday night,
yeah.
6,500. And then they
followed... What,
the Moose drew? The Moose drew 6,100 on that Thursday night.
Close.
And then they followed that up on Saturday by drawing about 8,500 people, a little under 8,000, and the Moose drew just over 7,000. So really, I mean, you see these pictures floating around on Twitter and on other pages now, where the arena looks like, you know, it looks like a midday practice. There's so few people in the stands. You know, there are serious attendance problems. I mean, I'll tell you what, Quebec City, build your arena, you'll get a team
in half an hour.
Exactly, in half an hour. So, you know, Phoenix, you know, if Hulsizer ends up buying this team in Phoenix, I don't think he will, but if he ends up buying this team, don't fret, City of Winnipeg. You have your choice of any other number of NHL teams that cannot draw flies.
How could he buy that team, Drew? Nobody's there. He's going to lose a ton of money if they're going to try and subsidize. And you know what? I don't suddenly think... They're outdrawn, I think, combined. Their two games on the weekend were outdrawn by Phoenix Suns exhibition game.
Yes, they were.
Almost by the Moose, exactly. We just talked about that, Ezzy. Almost by the Moose. And the truth is, Drew, I mean, if you're him and you're thinking, oh, suddenly you're going to buy the team and people are going to come in droves.
Yeah.
Well, the team ain't that good any this year. I mean, it's early. But the team isn't, I don't think it's going to go on the Cinderella run of last year and they hardly got anybody. And this team's, you're not going to buy the team and people are going to suddenly come. If people wanted the team to stay, they would come now to support the team and hope that you would buy them.
Right. All these people in Coyotes jerseys, why aren't they filling up the arena now, you know, showing their support that the end, letting people know that they want the team to stay? I mean, the arena's half full.
Half is generous.
Half full. I mean, if these are the announced attendance figures, and they always inflate the announced attendance figures,
yes.
Makes you wonder what the real attendance figures are. It'd be actually quite frightening.
3,000 or 4,000.
We talked about it. We started off the show with it last week. It happened last Tuesday night. That was the Rick Rippon incident in Minnesota when he physically confronted a fan. The announcement came down Friday. Six games of a suspension. Your thoughts on the suspension?
It was too light.
Agreed, and there was talk on TV that one of the reasons for this was because the NHL didn't want to put a huge suspension on him and then have possible charges laid by the fan, which is going to maybe happen, and then use the 10-game suspension or 15 or 20-game suspension, you know, as essentially if they're going to take it to trial, if they're going to, you know, file a claim and they're not going to settle it, is to use that as use that in evidence, I guess, that this is a serious offense and the NHL is not taking it lightly. So the NHL gives 6 games. That's one argument. That's one theory. The other theory is that the NHL is never going to penalize somebody for that much. Or the other argument is that Matthew Barnaby did a similar thing and only got 4 games. And for 2 years, you know, Bob McKenzie said they gave inflation.
They need to stop bringing up suspensions from 10 years ago.
This is the easy way out here. The NHL, it's 6 games. The guy grabbed the fan for no reason because he told him to be a professional. First of all, anybody who's justifying it, get out of here. And you know, the guy pulled a fan to try to fight him and was pulled back by his teammates and his coach because the guy told him to be a professional, which he wasn't being because he pushed the linesman and sucker punched the guy in the fight. So the fan was right now. The fan's being a little bit ridiculous here, trying to go to, you know, he's going to file a civil claim against him and try and get money out of it. For the most part, we don't know the situation again, but for the most part, I think it's a little bit overboard. But the NHL needs to say, you know what? Like David Stern, it's a different situation, but David Stern puts the hammer down. Even in negotiations right now with the players, he's saying, oh, we're going to contract. David Stern puts the hammer down. Where's Bettman here? 6 games? Where's Bettman here?
Well,
six games?
Do you think the fan lost a little bit
you're
of...
You're not on, Drew. I don't know what you're saying here.
I was on. I don't know why my mic turned off on its own. But the...
Drew.
I'm on.
Mime.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear him?
Little pantomime going. Maybe it's your headphones, Richie.
Oh, it is, yeah.
Okay, thank you. I knew I was on. I didn't touch anything.
We can hear your terrific voice right now.
Do you think the fan lost any of his credibility when he started talking about the terrible assault that he was a victim of?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
I mean, you know.
But you don't want it? Don't do it.
If he had kept his mouth shut, and we talked about it with on the Great Canadian Talk Show with Marty, if he had kept his mouth shut and sort of had his lawyer contact the, you know, any number of the lawyers that work in the Canucks front office, do you think he could have gotten a little bit of cash that way?
Yeah, he probably could have, Drew. I mean, he's ridiculous again for doing that. You know, pending, obviously, word of his circumstances. They don't seem to be dire in terms of finances, so it's a little bit ridiculous.
Right.
And, yeah, of course, he's not endearing himself to the media and the fans. And okay, fine. But, again, these situations shouldn't happen, and Rick Rippon brought this upon himself.
My favorite part of it is that Gary Bettman offered to attend a game with the fan and take him out for dinner beforehand. And I'm thinking, God, hasn't the guy suffered enough that he's going to have to do this now?
And I think the best thing about this whole situation, in my opinion, is the fact that they keep re-showing this incident and the fact that right after Manny Malhotra, and everyone probably picked up on this too, right after Manny Malhotra comes in, you can read his lips and he's saying, I did not touch him. I didn't touch him. And to me, that just kind of sums up how ridiculous this entire thing is, because the fan is a bit of a goofball. Rick Rippon in this case was a little out of his element here.
I don't think the fan's a goofball. He didn't do anything that I haven't done a million times. You know, he didn't reach over the glass. He called. He told Rippon he's he's unprofessional.
Where did he get that hair from? That 70s show. I mean,
Now we're commenting on the guy's hair.
Remus.
Nobody in this room should be talking about anybody else's hair. At least the guy had hair.
I think Ezzie's calling him a goofball because, you know, he came out and said that he was assaulted and acted like it was such a big deal. Not
Michael's
because
got my back here.
Everybody's like, I think you're just.
We know where our loyalties are being divided along the lines in this show.
I think a professional.
Okay. This is a cheerocracy, Drew. I said it once. I'll say it again.
L.A. Kings defenseman Drew Doughty goes on the IR with a concussion after a late hit by Eric Cole. I assume you guys saw the video of the hit. What did you think of the hit? I thought it was suspendable.
I kind of went back and forth on this one. I would err towards suspension, Drew, in safety, and it's one of the best players in the league, and that shouldn't have a factor in it. But you know what? It was on the edge, and I think in this day and age with head injuries, he's got a concussion, he's being diagnosed with a concussion. Err on the side of caution. Give the guy a suspension. You know, again, try and basically put it this way, guys. The NFL finds 10 guys, you know, it's exaggeration, but finds like 10 guys last week. And then, were there any headshots this week?
No. Well, there were, but I mean, nothing like last week.
That's what I'm saying. You know, that will, you know, be prohibitive if you were to suspend these guys. We've talked about this so many times in this show. I just be hard on these. Even if it's borderline. I know there was one on
Dustin Brown.
Dustin Brown.
Yeah.
You go for the frame by frame, and it looks shoulder to shoulder kind of, and you're not really sure. I like how the ref
erred on the side of the caution.
Absolutely.
Throw him out.
You know, it was close. You almost hit it the shoulder to the head. I like how the ref would err on the side of caution as opposed to not calling it.
Richie,
Guys will do it less.
That hit had more to do with the timing, in my opinion. It was a little bit of a late hit.
Brown's a physical player.
Right. And I think the reason why, yeah, you're right. Once they narrowed it down frame by frame, they actually saw that it was shoulders.
Yeah, but
chest.
You know what? The ref doesn't get to doesn't get to officiate the game frame by frame.
Right.
That's what the problem I have with replay and in general is, you know, it's a fast moving game. You don't get frame by frame capabilities, you know, when you're reffing the game in live action. That's my problem with it.
Yeah.
Final one. We're going to skip the final one that I had, and we're actually going to go to the email. Where we are, yes. Kyle and Saint Vitale, sort of taking along on your lines as he has sent in his own all whatever team.
He's jealous.
Right. And Kyle and Saint.
Not jealous. I'd like to see that. I think good on Kyle for bringing that to the
That's
show.
That's right. If you have your all, if you have your own all NHL occupation team, food team, color team, whatever, be like Kyle. And Kyle sent in his all late night talk show team. So we'll go through this. In goal, Ryan has. In goal, Kyle and Saint Vitale has Ryan Dennis Miller.
Okay.
On defense, he has Shane Conan O'Brien.
I like.
Okay. On defense, John Craig Ferguson.
Good.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. With the Habs, Craig. That's where Ferguson played, right? The Habs.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
And coach of the Jets.
Almost fell out of the press box.
No, general manager of the Jets.
GM of the Jets.
And a former neighbor of mine on Ramsgate.
Really?
Yeah.
Drew, you're giving away. Drew, you're giving away some key demo.
When I was a kid, I went to his house trick or treating, and I was dressed up as a hockey player, and he said he offered to sign me. Fortunately, his son took that to heart and actually did sign me to a 3-year contract. The Leafs are now paying me $6 million a year. On forward, Chris Larry King. You know, both of whom are retired, so that's quite fitting. Forward Taylor Arsenio Hall.
Oh, love it!
I like that one.
Everybody, woo, 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 woo. If you remember,
never do that again.
If you remember your Arsenio Hall days, on forward Johnny Carson, and Kyle and Saint Vitale makes a note in brackets here that there are some good subs available at Jimmy John's, which I do wholeheartedly
agree
with.
Jimmy John's is a very good sub.
Very good sub place in the States. Excellent sub place.
Big shout out to Kyle for that. Was great.
It's not done yet.
Oh, we're not.
There's
done.
Honorable mentions.
Okay.
Chris John Stewart.
Yes.
I like it.
Pat Jimmy Falloon, which is Lake Fallon. It's close, he says.
A stretch, but we'll give him that. Okay,
we'll give it to him, but next time, Kyle, sharpen up a little bit there.
Okay. Travis Pat Zajac.
I like that one.
Zajac. Yeah, I like that one a lot.
A little bit of spelling, but I'm going to give him that one.
He gets 10 out of 10 for creativity.
Yeah, definitely.
He wasn't happy with your all-Chuck team, Ezzy, so he decided to go with this one instead.
He didn't say anything about that.
In the email, he did.
Oh, okay.
There's some criticism regarding the all-Chuck team.
That's all right. We'll work through it.
J. Charlie Rose Hill.
Not bad.
Charlie Rose, that's, you know, right, PBS, yeah. if you're a public access kind of guy.
You know, talking about Charlie Rose. We love Charlie Rose.
Well, you know, Charlie Rose is, you know, just a desk and two guys talking
that's
around.
What he said at the beginning of the show. What are you stealing his motto?
I think that's what it also says in the description of the show, Drew.
Exactly what it says.
I end this show saying good night and good luck. I didn't invent that, believe it or not.
You didn't?
No.
Who does that?
You don't know good night and good luck was the original sign-off. Well, first of all, it's Keith Olbermann's sign-off on MSNBC.
Oh, God.
And it's also the sign-off, I want to say, not Walter Cronkite, but, oh, God.
Hold on, Drew, but your intro was original.
My intro was very original.
It's all about the intro.
Okay. I'm trying to think of the broadcast, Edward R. Murrow on CBS News used to say good night and good luck.
What are you, born in the 1930s?
We don't know who these obscure people are, okay? Next you're going to
be talking about... Did you not see the George Clooney movie called Good Night and Good Luck?
Drew, next you're going to be talking about Lee Atwater and Michael Dukakis' presidential campaign, okay? Let's just, you know, let's get going here.
The final one that Kyle from St. Vitale sent in for the Jets fans in the crowd, Phil Wanda Sykes.
I like that one, too.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
So like kudos to Kyle and St. Vitale. And if you want to be like Kyle and send us in your all-whatever team, send it to drew@illegalcurve.com.
Adam Bill Maher, Mayor Maher.
That would work.
That one.
Okay, that's good.
Any Colbert's?
Any Colberts?
No, just one bear. Just one bear over here on the other side of the glass.
You know, I forgot to mention, I forgot to tell Remus about this. I posted this on former illegalcurve.com writer Neil Rockman's wall.
It's not an episode of the show unless he's talking
Facebook.
Facebook.
And this is for Remus. I actually, just by doing some primary research on HockeyDB, there actually is a player named Brian Bagel. He never played in the NHL, but his name is spelled B-E-I-G-E-L, so he has to be added to the all-food team.
Oh. Well, we'll revamp the all-food
team. There's also
been
a discussion whether or not Kelly Buckberger should be allowed to be on the team, but That's for another show, though, I guess.
We had a person in the chat room actually have an addition for the all-food team. His suggestion was Joe Kosher, a pun on Joe Kosher.
Right, okay.
Okay, I can deal with that.
Obviously, we have a member of the tribe in the chat room making that
suggestion. That's right,
Anyways, let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to do rapid fire. We're going to do cheers and jeers. And coming up at the top of the hour, the Kick FM election special. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on 92.9 Kick FM.
Rack's voice did ring. Seems he was troubled by just one thing. Open the lid and
Remus, I'm throwing you a bone tonight.
Yeah.
Also, because I forgot to change the music between segments there.
I have to think of a costume, by the way.
I have to think of a costume, too.
I do have a costume, actually.
I have one, but I think it's too offensive, so I can't say it on there.
Discretion is the better part of valor, Richard, so go with that. Hang on, I got to just turn off the Monster Mash right now.
Never turn off the Monster Mash. I think we should leave it running the whole segment. You know,
I agree.
Except I got to play the rapid fire. I have to play the rapid fire theme song. It'll cause too much trouble. Anyways, it's time for everybody's favorite segment. It's time for rapid fire.
Rapid fire. Good question, Drew. Lucky for the Canucks, Rippon's not any good.
Shane Doan, he's a great skater.
Drafting is an inexact science.
The drugs are always going to outpace the testing.
Raise your hand here if you've mocked a player while at a hockey game.
Way to go, Rick.
Puck skills aren't tremendous.
I don't like the direction of the team. I think the team is moving sideways.
The team you have on the ice, to me, isn't a playoff team.
Fabian Brunstrom, Andre Markov, it's been a tough go for him.
Can he prove to be a possible top six forward?
Practice shouldn't be that fun ever. I'm a proud subscriber to the NHL Center Ice Package. Thank you, Dad.
I thought about that line numerous times. Like, it's quite funny.
It is a good line there. Former NHL referee Carey Fraser has recently blasted the NHL for what he says was the NHL's ambivalence toward headshots. He cites, for example, two game misconducts he handed down, which were later rescinded by NHL head office for being, and I quote, clean hockey hits. Do you think his statements were accurate or simply sour grapes from an ex-official who is on the outs with the NHL fraternity?
The comment was great. We talked about it earlier, Drew. I mean, Aaron said it of caution. That's what he's doing. He says the NHL is undercutting him by doing so, and the NHL referees today. I mean, I don't think Carey Fraser is on the outs. He was a referee in the NHL.
Apparently he is on the outs because they fired his son-in-law or something like that.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, he's a referee in the NHL for years and years and years. Very well respected. Good head of hair. You know, he would give Troy Palomalu a run for his money in the Head and Shoulders commercials. But no, jokes aside, Drew.
That was a joke.
Yeah, I knew you were gonna say that. He, you know, on the outs or not, I think his statement is absolutely accurate. I mean, sometimes you have to support your officials. I mean, the NFL does this really well. You know, they have Mike Pereira now on the NFL games, and he comes on TV and explains the calls.
Love it.
Very rarely, if at all, he will ever say the officials is wrong. And I realize sometimes it gets me angry, sometimes it gets other fans angry. But the truth is, Drew, you support your officials, and it lessens the controversies. And I think the NHL is right now doing its officials a little bit of a disservice. Maybe it has to do with the bargaining agreement. I don't know, but it just seems to be. I don't think it is because it's been a long time thing.
Right, and I think it's always good when we have respected officials like Carey Fraser challenging some of the decisions made by the NHL brass. And I mean, you know, hopefully there's going to be a lot of dialogue throughout the year where people are challenging, you know, some decisions that are made by Bettman and Colin Campbell. You know, maybe Stephen Walkham, maybe he thought, you know, Dustin Brown should have been suspended. You know, just because one guy doesn't feel one way, that's why everything's done by committee in the front office. Yeah. You have to have a lot of input from the NHL Officials Association. So I have no problem with it, and he's speaking his mind, and I respect that.
The average ticket price for an NHL game rose 4.4% this season. How much do you think an average ticket to an NHL game costs?
$80 American.
No.
70.
No.
65.
No.
$55 American.
54 and a quarter.
It's not bad.
Hold on, is this Price is Right?
No.
Can I bet a dollar?
You're all disqualified if
can
it's
bet
Price
a dollar?
Is Right. No, you can't bet a dollar. What do you think about 54 and a quarter for the average NHL?
I don't think that's unreasonable for the most part, Drew. I mean, if these guys could fill the upper bowl, I'd be more concerned about them buying the expensive tickets, but nobody's in these games anyways. I mean, $54, it's expensive, especially 40 nights a year, obviously, but if you're a fan and you can afford it, I mean, I would hope that people in cities of 2-3 million people would be able to get more than 7,000 people to a game. We all guessed higher, so it must be more reasonable than we thought.
Yeah, I guess so.
What do you think, Drew?
You know, 54 and a quarter is not bad. I think it's not bad in Canada. I don't know what it's like. I think down in the U.S., I think it's a whole different ballgame. I mean, that's the problem.
And the point should be raised that if there actually aren't anybody there, we have to blame some of that on the ticket prices, and maybe they should be lower. Maybe if you sold more tickets but had less. I guess that's – remember the whole Toronto Blue Jays had an issue with that?
Yeah.
I just want to say, is that $54, does that include Ticketmaster fees?
I don't know if that includes Ticketmaster fees or not.
Ridiculous. But,
yeah, well, Ticketmaster fees are just absolutely absurd.
Mike Jam didn't really like them either.
Mike Brophy of Sportsnet reports that Colin Campbell is going to speak to his counterpart in the NFL for advice on how to crack down on trash talk between players. Is trash talk a legit part of the game, or simply the actions of those who can't let their on-ice performance do the talking for themselves?
I love trash talk. I think it's great. I don't know what the heck. Why don't you worry about concussions, Colin, and stop talking about trash talking, which has no effect on the game, and I think gets players probably hating each other more and fans more interested.
Whether trash talking is a legit part of the game, or is something a tool for less skilled players, it is and always will be a huge part of all sports. Not just hockey, not just football. Yeah. There's trash talking in
Michael
skiing.
Jordan.
Don't make me back that up. But I mean, sports,
that's a random sport.
Sports are competitive, and people will do anything to get the competitive advantage. And sometimes you got to throw out a couple words here and there. So Colin Campbell might be talking to Roger Goodell or some owners in the NFL about this, but as far as I'm concerned, it hasn't been a major issue in the NHL.
If only people knew how much Michael Jordan trash talked.
Well, I think everybody knows that he was one of the greatest trash talkers of all time.
Reggie Miller, too.
Yeah, well, Reggie Miller and Spike Lee have their famous back and forths in the battle between the Pacers and the Knicks.
But if you guys don't think that other guys have been big trash talkers before, too, I mean, Stevie Yzerman used to whine to the officials more than anybody, and he wasn't exactly the quietest guy. He's a very quiet and calm, probably one of the most respected guys in the NHL. But him, Gretzky, those guys talk on the ice.
Okay. I think what I can't stand about trash talking is when there's a guy trash talking and he's down 5-1 or something. Look, you can only trash talk if you're winning, in my books.
Maybe if you're playing against him. If you're watching, who cares?
Well, I mean, you see a guy trash talking or, pounding his chest. I mean, not so much in the NHL. But, buddy, you're down 44-7. Get off the field.
If you pay a $54 average and a guy's trash talking, at least there's some life in the game when you're down 5-1.
I suppose. That's the problem. Enigmatic Russian forward Nick Ryan. No, I'm just getting a little confused here.
Skip the question.
I got a lot going on. I see that now. Of Dominik Hasek, Pavel Dimitra, Sandis Ozilinch, Evgeny Nabokov, Glenn Metropolit, and Martin Straka, all of whom who are currently playing in Europe, who would still have the greatest impact in the NHL?
Not Dominic Kelly.
Interesting that you skip that question, because before when Ezzy and I were reviewing the questions, we both said, hey, that's a really good question.
I didn't skip it on purpose. We got a lot going on is all.
I think we were going to put all of the whiteout tape on that one.
I'm going to say Evgeny Nabokov, because I think he can still play the NHL at a high level. He's a netminder. I believe he's younger than the rest of those guys. Dominic Hasek is like 75. Clearly, Evgeny Nabokov, he went to the KHL basically for the money. The other guys, I don't think could have secured a National Hockey League contract, unlike Nabokov.
Out of this list of how many players? Six? One, two, three, four,
yeah,
five,
six.
I'm going to say Glenn Metropolit. He filled a nice kind of niche role on the Montreal Canadiens last year as kind of like a face-off defensive, odd, once in a while offensive guy. So, and he played most of his pro career in Europe. So I'm going to go with Metro.
He's actually a good story, but from the downtown Toronto, didn't grow up with much money and worked his butt off to get where he was and where he is.
Hey, don't forget about my boy Peter Nedved, 15 points in 15 games in the Czech League.
Czech League. Oh, my God. Peter Nedved's not still playing.
Next you're going to be setting your own stats in the ASHL League there, Remus.
I can't believe he's still playing.
Enigmatic Russian forward Nikolai Zverev, now with the Philadelphia Flyers, was recently told by team management that he could no longer refuse to speak to the Philadelphia media and or hide behind a translator. How do you feel about a team forcing a player to speak to the media?
I feel very strongly that every player should speak to the media. I realize that it's harder for certain guys who don't speak English as their primary language, but
or don't want to.
In this day and age, with the amount of money these guys are getting paid, and blah 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 blah, and the fact that a lot of hockey players have Twitter accounts now, you gotta be available to the public. I mean, if you don't show up on camera when the camera crews come in, fans don't like that.
Which the question was, why did the Philadelphia Flyers sign Nikolai Zverev?
You can answer that question, too, if you want.
I still don't know the answer to that one. I know the answer to the other one, and I think it's a good decision by them. He should go and face the cameras. He should start to learn English and get acclimated with the culture here, and maybe that will make him a little bit more well-liked by his teammates.
You know what's really bizarre is that he agreed to do it, but he said, I still won't speak to Tim Panasio.
Mm-hmm. I heard about that.
Referring to Panasio as that Russian guy. Panasio's not Russian.
As long as he talks to our boy Anthony Sanfilippo, then,
That's right.
No, he should talk to Panach, too.
You guys, Panache, you guys are tight.
I follow him on Twitter.
You follow everyone on Twitter. That doesn't mean anything. Next, you're going to be citing your Facebook friends as your real friends.
He does.
Oh, well, yeah, I know. That's a problem. Lindy Ruff is the longest tenured head coach in the NHL, having been behind the bench in Buffalo since 1997.
Wow.
How many coaches do you think have been hired and fired since Ruff took control in Buffalo?
400.
Also, sorry, it's not true that Lou Lamoriello has done the hiring and firing of all of these coaches.
Steal a comment from Ezzy. This is the biggest Drew question ever, right? Have you ever read a Drew question?
It really
like
is.
This? My guess...
did you get this answer off of Sporkle?
97. I'd say about six coaches a year, probably more than that. We'll say seven coaches a year times about 13 years is that 91?
That's 91.
91, I'll guess.
No, but okay. It's Richie. It's hired and fired.
Oh, so 182?
Double that, yeah.
Ezzy, do you have an answer?
250.
Okay, obviously you don't have a legitimate answer. Remus, do you have an answer?
$1.
I'll just go with Richie on this one.
The answer is actually 155.
It was only 95.
And the truth
off.
Is I actually saw that before you whited it out, and so I just guessed what I would have guessed normally.
Drew, that was why you used that little whiteout.
That's why I used the whiteout for it, yeah. Okay, you know, I printed it out on
Fair enough. That's actually less than I thought, Drew. But it's still a lot of people to be hired and fired before, between you being hired and not yet fired. I give credit to Lindy Ruff and more credit to Darcy Regier for holding him in that long.
Okay, well, exactly. I mean, 13 years he's been the head coach there. On Hockey Night in Canada this past weekend, Don Cherry aired video that he says shows Senators defenseman Chris Campoli deliberately trying to fire a slap shot off the ankle of Canadiens defenseman P.K. Subban. A, do you think Campoli deliberately did so? And B, do you have a problem with him doing so?
I wish I saw this, but we were having a little bit of a birthday bash, and we were watching the end of the Giants-Phillies game that night.
Yeah,
I didn't see
that. Happy birthday to Richie, by the way, everyone.
You did it last week. Thank you. I didn't say that for that.
47 years old now, folks.
Come on, Drew.
Go ahead and answer the question.
Give my real age.
22?
It's more like it.
Okay.
27.
I know. 27.
The Don Cherry. If that's true, I mean, this is a whole member. Alfredson slapshot against, who was it, in the playoffs there at Niedermeyer? The intentional stuff. If that's intentional, I absolutely have a problem with that. You're not trying. You can't try and intentionally injure a guy with a puck. It's absurd. Whether he did it or not, you can't really, read into his intent. But that, that's obviously some sketchy behavior. I mean, I didn't see it. I don't think any of you guys saw it.
I didn't see this either. I don't know which obscure hockey blog you got this off of, Drew, but I don't understand.
It wasn't
why
obscure,
I don't
really
know
at
why
all.
There's a part B to this question. If yes, do you have a problem with him doing so? Well, shooting a puck off of a player is, I don't know if I have a problem with it. It's kind of weird.
Deliberately doing so. Deliberately trying to target a guy's ankle.
Well, if you're
trying
to target
a guy's
ankle,
injure,
yeah,
call
that's
what you
definitely
want.
A cheap move. If you're trying to deflect the puck off of him into the net, that's
no,
one thing.
No, he was trying to dump it in, and he was trying to fire it at Subban.
I don't mind the old Bobby Hull going down the wing and firing a puck at the goalie's head. You're trying to score. The goalie's fully – the goalie's suspecting of a shot coming at him. A defenseman or winger is a little bit different.
Let's move on, Drew.
Okay. Guess you guys didn't like that question. Sorry, guys.
Drew, meet us, take a show off, and we'll meet us on November 2nd.
Thanks, guys. The Anaheim Ducks were furious with the Detroit Red Wings following their loss to the Wings on Saturday night. They claimed the Red Wings frequently benefit from questionable calls and that Nicholas Cronwall specifically is a dirty player. Do you think either of those claims are factual, or are the Ducks just venting following a tough defeat?
Wings... don't take that many penalties for the most part. I actually wrote an article for Hockey Perspectives this week.
Where's the book available?
Not the book. This is not for the website. But yeah, the book's on Amazon. The website, I wrote an article. It was a correlation between penalty minutes and minor penalties, which is, I can get into that in the next show. But Detroit, for the most part, guys, doesn't take a lot of minor penalties. And I think once you don't take a lot of minor penalties after a while, you get a reputation of being a clean team. You don't get that many penalties. Conversely, Anaheim's a dirty team, always has been a high penalty-taking team. So, yeah, I can see Anaheim's issue. I'm sure a couple, some of those calls are based on the reputations. As for Nicholas Cronwall, like Nicholas Chalmerson, they play on the edge. They run guys. They sometimes get close to knees. Yeah, can you call Nicholas Cronwall dirty? Probably sometimes. He does throw a knee out there once in a while. But he plays on the edge, and I would say he's not a dirty player, but a couple of games and a couple of his plays are dirty plays, but I don't think it's an intentional kind of thing.
As if,
you know what,
it's reckless.
I've never found the Detroit Red Wings or Nicholas Cronwall per se to be a dirty player or team. And Cronwall's very talented defensively. This seems like the Ducks are just a little bit frustrated with a team that they know they're going to have to beat in the Western Conference. So, I mean, this is stuff that, who are you complaining to here? If you have a legitimate concern, you can take it up with Colin Campbell or Gary Bettman. I mean, this sounds like a little bit of whining, in my opinion.
Okay.
Okay, that's reasonable.
Got the tunes ready?
I got the tunes ready. It's time for Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers and Jeers. Cheers and Jeers.
Cheer to the Dallas Stars for being progressive and hiring Gary Roberts as a development coach. He's on the cutting edge of working out and eating right for these players.
I'm actually cheering myself. The Legal Curve was lucky enough to be invited into the FanDuel Hockey Writers League, but I ended up winning this weekend, and I won $65.
I'm going to cheer Patrick Sharp. He scored the overtime winning goal on Monday, and that was his third game winner in a row.
Yeah,
Patrick Sharp is amazing hockey player. Right now, even verbally, that says he isn't amazing.
I'm cheering Rick DiPietro for his pink pads. He's wearing pink pads in support of the fight against breast cancer.
Cheers and jeers.
Cheer or jeer. Remus, I'm going to start with you for cheers and jeers this week.
All right, I got a bit of an interesting cheer this week. A fan asked a question to Adam Burrish asking to apologize for his poor play in the game NHL 11. Supposedly, he blocked someone on a 2-on-0. So Adam Burrish was asked this question. You know, I'm going to give him a cheer for his response. He said to the fan in a video posted on the Stars website, "Sorry I ruined your game. You know what, though? When your guys are that slow, they get in my way. So whoever's controlling them, I don't know if it's you or the computer. Maybe you should have a talk with them." He says, "I'm sorry I ruined the game, but talk to your guys next time." So you know what? I'll give Adam Burrish, you know, props for taking that tongue-in-cheek and not taking it too seriously that, you know, he's not good in NHL 11.
Or in real life.
Yeah.
I played Chris Pronger there for that line.
Okay, yeah, there you go. Nicely done. That's, I mean, Pronger and Burrish last year in the playoffs had the famous back and forth, and everyone said, "You're Adam Burrish, be quiet." Ezzy, cheer or jeer?
Okay, I'm going to jeer power rankings. In NHL power rankings, team power rankings, whether it's on Yahoo or Sportsnet or, you know, some guy's blog, I think it's completely pointless to rank NHL teams week by week. You know, the Devils, they might be the worst team in the league this year, but to rank them after 3 weeks, 30th and overall, and put the Leafs number two after 3 weeks is just ridiculous and pointless. I mean, you're going to look back on those rankings in 3 weeks and be like, you know, this means nothing. So I think it's kind of pointless. And when people, you know, take stock in it or quote the power rankings on TSN, I mean, you know, TSN provides the best hockey coverage in the world. But as far as power rankings go, I think it's kind of pointless. So that's what I'm jeering this week.
Richard Paul?
I'm cheering that documentary, Oil Change.
I saw that. That was good.
They've done a pretty really good job. I know there's some questions about the production and who's paying who and from the behind the scenes there and who's making money off it. Regardless, they put out a good product. TSN's broadcasting it. I've really enjoyed it. It gives you a little bit of an insight into what's going on the day-to-day and how the workings of an NHL team and the draft. And you know what? Any kind of insight like that, and hopefully in that Washington-Pittsburgh HBO special, you get a little insight looking to the NHL, a little bit more familiar with people behind the scenes, and I think that's only good for the National Hockey League and publicity.
And I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jeers this week by jeering the Edmonton Oilers. They've announced that they're going to become the first Canadian team to have cheerleaders in the NHL. 23 other teams have them. Oilers president Patrick LaFleur says it's something that the fans have been asking for. I don't believe that the fans have been asking for it. I think they've been asking more so for a competitive product on the ice. But I just don't like cheerleaders in hockey. I don't think it works, especially in Edmonton. You don't need cheerleaders to artificially drive up support for your team. I just think it's Bush League.
You know, you're feeding to the horny fans what you're doing.
Well, it's very un-Canadian to have cheerleaders.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's ridiculous.
Okay. I see you guys finally agreed with me. That rarely happens. Anyways, that's it for tonight on 92.9 Kick FM and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big reminder that in case you missed our announcement earlier in the program, starting Saturday, November 6th, we will be on Sports Radio 1290, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, every Saturday morning on Sports Radio 1290. Next week will be our final show here on Kick FM, so be sure to tune in. We'll have some special surprises and some special retrospectives and things of that nature. You know, thank you, of course, to the three men on the other side of the glass, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus. We encourage you to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, illegalcurve.com. This show will be available, in case you missed any of it, immediately following the program on Ustream at www.ustream.tv/illegalcurve. The podcast will be available tomorrow on iTunes. Just search for iTunes. You can become one of our followers on iTunes. Just search Illegal Curve. And, you know, if you are in the Brandon, Manitoba region and you want to hear this show again tomorrow night on 106.5, CJ 106.5, you'll hear a replay of this program. And Sunday morning from 10 a.m. to 12 noon on Kick FM here will also be a replay. We're going to have to get out of here real quick tonight.
stay tuned for the special Kick FM election coverage. And until next Wednesday, we wish you good night and good luck.
The Illegal Curve Radio Show has been presented by Drew Mandel, Richard Pollack, and Ezra Ginsberg. Tune in again next Wednesday at 7 o'clock for more of what you love. Don't slow down.